All right, it's a slightly later version of our show of Bill and Wendy, and Wendy is not part of today's show, nor will she be for the rest of the week. Today, our friend Dane Neal is sitting in for Wendy. Hi, Dane. How are you?
Hello, Bill. How
nice
are you
to
doing?
See you.
It's interesting. It's always great to be here. Obviously, great to be kind of sidekicking with you. But at a moment where political history being made.
Yeah, to some extent. Now, Ryan Burrow is in the newsroom. Ryan's filling in for Steve Bertrand. Ryan, any big surprises? We just we heard from James Comey. He is the FBI director speaking about the investigation into Hillary Clinton and the emails. Were, in your opinion, any surprises?
Well, you know, I think we learned a lot about the investigation. This doesn't sound, according to the FBI director, like this is something they just said, yeah, whatever, it's fine. You know, they went through months and months of emails. They were given 30,000 emails. They read all of those documents. They also had to go and find emails that the former secretary sent, that she received from her phone, from her computer, from all these different devices, all these different servers, locations in the United States, locations out of the United States. So it sounds like it was a long, intensive investigation that started back in 2014. And, you know, they seem to think that she was extremely careless, but they don't think that there's enough there to prosecute her.
Will this become a bigger political issue as the election rolls on? Is this going to be the kind of thing that could be a detriment to her in any way?
Well, we'll see. I'm watching Donald Trump's Twitter feed right now. I'm sure he'll be chiming in here.
He'll
very,
call this
very
disgraceful.
Soon. Yeah, well, I mean, you know, he's been the one. Here's the thing. You go back into the beginning of this political campaign, which would have been last fall and into the winter, and remember those words that Senator Bernie Sanders said, we're sick and tired of hearing about your damn emails, right? And
right.
We all kind of giggled a little bit when he said it. But, you know, that set the tone on the Democratic side. She wasn't really pushed as far as these emails. I mean, she's been forced to answer some questions on the campaign trail, but we all knew that a general election, you know, the gloves would come off, especially with Donald Trump.
Yeah.
And, you know, so we'll see how this kind of plays out in the months to come. You know, it's kind of in the DOJ's court now to decide whether or not they're going to pursue this any further.
It was interesting to see the way that that he described it. And he used the words, and these will be campaign buzzwords, you'll see for sure, you know, that he was extremely careless. I mean, you don't want your president to be, you know, against you or a criminal or doing bad things or nefarious, but you also don't want them to be incompetent or extremely careless too. And I think that just the fact, here's the intent. They went and they looked and they didn't find anything super dangerous, but she was extremely careless. So I think that that's just fortunate for us, but she set the server up on purpose for the purpose of skirting through whatever the regular channels of communication were. So, I mean, you look at that, nothing bad happened, I guess, but, you know, it could have.
Well, it's potentially dangerous.
And part of this investigation, too, was, you know, while she's flying across the world and she's sending these emails, you know, is it possible that these foreign governments could hack into her system and perhaps get some top secret information that way? So it wasn't just on her, but, you know, what kind of information might be out there, may be exposed because of the things she was doing.
Ian Schur is going to be with us later from CNET, and I'll ask him a similar question to what I'm going to ask you, Ryan. But I would just assume, with people's email accounts and websites being hacked on a regular basis, that no matter how safe you think a website is or an email account is, it probably isn't 100% foolproof.
And you heard the FBI director say that. You know, there are just some things, some corners of these servers that we just couldn't get at, and we don't know what the end result is. What we do know is 110 emails were determined to have contained classified information at the time that they were sent, and 8 of those chains contain top secret information. So we do know those figures.
Is this the kind of thing where at some point somebody will ask that these emails be made public? So, I mean, it's the kind of story that lends itself to that. Are these emails going to be accessible to all of us at some point, do you think?
I would assume at some point, yeah. You can FOIA that. In fact, I'm sure some of them are available now. You know, as we heard him say, they went through 30,000 emails, and they just got through all of those, it sounds like, you know. And you throw the other conversations that she had from various servers and, you know, things that perhaps she didn't come forward and show or maybe didn't have access to. And you have, you know, potentially millions of documents.
Well, Ryan and Bill, you guys mentioned the possibility of being hacked. And she is a very unique individual with just her family situation with Bill. And Bill Clinton, that is. And Bill and I were talking, not Bill Clinton, Bill Leff and I were talking off of the air, is that didn't her husband, you know, make one of those trips to North Korea with Kim Jong-il, get his picture taken, you know, one of those things. And you've got to figure at all times. And of course, the secretary in an official capacity traveling, that there's probably all sorts of enemies trying to hack into every mode of communication.
Yeah.
You know, they had access.
And not even enemies. Maybe some of our friends, you know, or the people who say they're our friends. I mean, you know, how stunned were the Germans that we were, you know, that we had some information on some of their, you know, content and their conversations with the prime minister. So, I mean, it's a game that's being played behind the, you know, behind the curtain, obviously. But who knows who has what information?
So what do you think, Ryan, happens next? Several when the field was larger on the Republican side, several of the candidates kept saying, if you want to vote for Hillary Clinton, feel free. But she's probably going to be doing jail time. So that's not in your best interest. What happens now? Is there any further appeal that's even possible with this, or does this just stop here and now?
You know, I mean, it's probably just sweep under the rug for the Clintons, I would think. You know, try to make this not the story, try to turn the attention. She's going to have the opportunity to do that today when she meets with President Obama at a campaign stop in North Carolina. Obviously, Donald Trump, known for not holding any punches back. He hasn't mentioned anything yet on Twitter. I'm a little surprised. Maybe he's crafting his message here, but
his Star of David emoji isn't quite ready. Give him a couple of minutes.
Well, you know, I mean, there's a news cycle to be won today, that's for sure. And, you know, is it going to be Hillary Clinton standing arm in arm with Barack Obama, or is it going to be, you know, whatever, you know, offensive the Donald Trump campaign takes at her?
Yep. Ryan, thanks very much. It's a story that Ryan and everybody in the WGN newsroom will be following closely all day. We'll keep you posted on any updates. We'll take a quick break in just a little bit. We'll tell you what's on the show. It should be a good one. Juliana Zobrist, a name you might not be familiar with, her husband Ben, one of the members of the Chicago Cubs. Juliana is going to be singing the national anthem there at Wrigley Field. We'll talk to her and a whole lot more on today's show. Stick around. It's Bill Leff and Dane Nealon for Wendy Snyder on WGN. Ryan, thanks very much. It's Bill Leff. Wendy Snyder has the week off. She's in Nashville. I'll give you the hotel and her room number later if you want to call her and check in and make sure everything's going well.
Yeah, just let her know you're thinking of her.
Absolutely.
As she's out on the road.
Absolutely. And I know she likes to stay up really late, so if that call comes in around 2:30 or 3 a.m., that's fine.
That's a good time.
Nothing wrong with that.
She'll be up watching infomercials.
Yeah,
all the time.
That's what she does late at night. Dane Neal is filling in. Now, Dane, you don't need to tell the whole story, but I find this very impressive. You were working here at the station yesterday for the 4th of July. You're doing some fill-in.
Sitting in for you, playing the role of you, yes.
For Wendy and myself. And you had something of a surprise celebrity guest just kind of materialize.
Well, you know, the positioning here, and for those listeners that have never been here, the station, the studio is amazingly positioned right here in beautiful Michigan Avenue. So there's always people walking by, and this happened to be 4th of July. And occasionally, you know, Bill, we'll see somebody recognizable, whether it's a local celebrity or a celebrity of note or a visitor, an athlete, just kind of walking by, and you're like, oh, hey. So Shane Reardon in the booth stood up, and of course this was happening behind me, and he points, and I turn around, and there is Jeremy Piven. You know, Chicago's
from Entourage, from the old Ellen show, the old sitcom Ellen.
He was the dean in Old School, one of my favorite movies.
Now, can I ask, when you saw Jeremy Piven, Chicago's own, Evanston's own Jeremy Piven, did you know it was him right away? Because the game Wendy and I usually play when that happens is, we just point and we go, doesn't that look like, and then we say the celebrity and we just look at them for 5 minutes trying to figure out if it could possibly be them.
Right. Doesn't that look like a teenage Rich Little or
something?
We'll
and you're
like,
that.
Oh, well, okay. Yeah. Oh,
you knew it was him.
Yeah. It looked like him.
Who was he with?
You know what? I cannot be positive because we didn't even start kind of breaking this down till afterwards, but he had a tall blonde lady with him, and I hope I'm not, I hope she's okay being announced.
I hope Mrs. Piven's okay with this news.
We didn't even really talk to her, but I think it was his, I think it might have been his longtime friend, sometime girlfriend, former, I guess, are you ever a former supermodel? You know, or is it like Secretary of State or Governor?
Supermodel.
You're always that. Rachel Hunter. I think it was.
Really?
I think
wow.
It was.
Wow.
I'm not positive, but she was in
but
the studio as well,
Rachel Hunter,
taking some pictures. So,
yeah.
So maybe we'll get to the bottom of that. But either way, so then he walked off once it was known, because you can hear, you know, the station from the street. People started crowding around trying to get, you know, pictures with him, say hi and all that. Then he walked off down the street, and I said, wow, it would be great to have him on. And then Shane mobilized like a, I don't know, like a guest booking hitman,
mm-hmm.
and then went off down the street. He said he got all the way to Ohio Street.
Oh, wow.
And then he talked him into it. And whoever the mystery woman was said, you should do this. This would be fun. And then he walked in the door. So the studio door opened and in. Now, you got to understand, too, is this was not planned in any way,
right.
shape, or form. And he had no idea what he was walking into. I'm sure he's obviously super familiar with WGN, but he didn't know maybe this was a morning zoo situation. Who knows?
And,
right?
And it is.
It could have been wacky. And so he kind of peeks in, and, you know, we were happy to have him in, and we got a chance to talk to him.
You had a different guest on, though, at the time,
didn't
you? That's
right. Yes, as a matter of fact. So in the seat that I'm sitting in now, kind of the co-host seat, we had Mike Harris, who is the director of culinary innovation for McDonald's.
Yeah.
You know, they make Big Macs, if you've ever heard of
those.
Oh,
yeah, I know those guys.
And so he says to himself, he's like, this is so cool. And he's fumbling with his camera, trying to get a picture. I might have took a picture, but it's hard. Like, while you're like, let's say I'm having this conversation with you, Bill, but then I'm also like, the camera creeps up because I'm going to take
That's
a picture.
That's awkward. Right.
And so he wanted to take some pictures, and he asked me afterwards if this happens all the time. And I said, well,
yes.
Not exactly that, but yeah, kind of.
Yeah.
Right. We do. I mean, things like that
Famous
happen.
People come by.
And so Jeremy will be, he's in town. He was over in London shooting, the Selfridges, which is a story. I guess there's a Chicago connection with that guy's the one who started Marshall Fields here in Chicago as well. So mm-hmm. he was working on that. He's back here today. He'll be at Wrigley Field throwing out the first pitch and doing the seventh inning stretch.
Oh, good.
He's, lamenting the loss of every single player on the Bulls, that the Bulls have given everyone away.
And this came up during the interview. He just talked about that.
Yeah. Yeah. I had to tell Blake Stubbs, who was calling in from his Hollywood headquarters, talking about the blockbuster movies, to just hold on a little bit.
Yep.
And we were able to talk to him about movies, some movies he liked, certainly a little bit about the food scene, some sports, and of course his love and affinity for Chicago.
There was a time, because he comes from Evanston, that I used to run into him quite often. I'd see him around town all the time, and I know that the last couple of years he's been extremely successful. He spent a lot of time on the coasts, you know, doing TV and movies and stuff, so I don't see him hardly at all now. But there was a time where on any given week or month, I'd see him two or three times just hanging around town.
Yeah, I mean, obviously great connections with Chicago and Evanston. Of course, that's where you're at on a regular basis.
Yeah.
So, of course, you would run into him. One of the things we did talk about and mentioned is that all of these celebrities, and there's a certain amount of them that go off to whatever level of success, and they're, you know, in New York or Los Angeles, is that they have kind of this common bond and love for Chicago.
Yeah,
so people
right.
that are from Chicago, have spent time here, grown up here, you know, they never forget how much they love it, and they have that in common with other celebrities around as well. I don't know if it's the same way, you know, Omaha, Nebraska, you know, or the Topeka, Kansas people, if they have that same kind of thing, but it is unique to Chicago.
Well, it's strange because you would think that there'd be a lot more celebrity sightings here in town. We don't have a lot of celebrities living here.
Well, you see an Andy Avalos now and then.
Yeah, you do. You do. That's true. I'm not going to say no to that. But you know how they tend to live, your famous people tend to live in either Los Angeles or in New York. For some reason, those are your two big options. I would almost think more of them would live here, but we really don't have a glut of them. And now that Oprah's gone, there's hardly any.
Well, Bill, I think here's part of it. I think that they are here on a regular basis, but one of the things that makes Chicago so cool is obviously Midwestern people, warm Chicagoans, very warm and friendly, but it just doesn't have that whole, people just kind of take it in stride. But
yeah, I guess
You know, we don't have the luxury of an Irv Cupson writing a column all the time saying
Sad,
who's over.
True.
At the restaurant, but who's at the pump room. But I think that there are, because they're here on a regular, I mean, people come in, we're doing more and more television shows,
mm-hmm.
more and more movies are filmed here, and universally, and this is great, so wherever I travel, whether it's East Coast or West Coast, people love Chicago. I know we've had our challenges on the gang violence and the gun shooting side, and certainly those are headlines, but Chicago's got a really great, you know, kind of image and reputation out there for the architecture, the food scene, the people.
Oh, yeah.
Yep.
And if you were a successful actor or actress or writer or profession like that, if you were, you're certainly not, and I'm not, but if we were, you could easily live here. I mean, we have airports here now, whereas if you were needed in Los Angeles or New York, you're always a plane fare away. It's easy to get there.
Isn't Lady Gaga pretty much setting up shop here?
I think she lives here sometimes. And even when celebrities don't live here, like I don't know if you guys will remember this, but there was a time where there were rumors that Jennifer Aniston and Vince Vaughn were buying a place in the city.
I remember
and the
that,
city yeah. was nuts. Like, oh, wouldn't that be great if they lived here? And that never materialized. But there was talk about it for an entire year. What if they bought a place here?
Well, he's been trying to sell his place here for a while.
I know. Yeah.
Okay,
he sold
get rid
a place
of that
here.
Thing.
Yes.
Yeah. It is a unique aspect of Chicago. It is as big and as cosmopolitan as maybe any city in the world. It is so diverse, and it is just it is one of the greatest places that anybody could live.
Mm-hmm.
But it does have kind of there's a small town element to it, right?
There is, definitely.
You know, like Kristen Cavallari, who's Jay Cutler. Remember, she said it's cramping her style. It's
right.
Negatively impacting her career.
Right.
That maybe these, but like you said, Bill, an hour and a half, 2 hours.
You can get anywhere you want.
Go sit in the hills.
I know. Do that. It's true. All right. We need to take a quick break. We're going to talk to Ian Schur from CNET in just a little bit. A lot of stories in the news having to do with tech, most notably the one with the FBI director explaining Hillary Clinton's involvement or lack of involvement with the emails. We'll get his take on that and a bunch more. Stick around. It's Bill Effen, Dane Nealon for Wendy Snyder on WGN. All right. It's Bill Effen. It's Dane Nealon for Wendy Snyder. Joined right now on the phone by Ian Schur. Ian is executive director of CNET News, here to talk about things in the tech world. Ian, how are you?
Everything good? How are you?
Good, very good. I want to start off with a story that just kind of happened about a half hour ago or so, and that was the FBI director, James Comey, talking about the investigation in Hillary Clinton and the emails. And I asked Ryan Burrow, who's our newsman at the time, but I thought I'd ask you a very, very similar question. Is any email server, is any website really 100% foolproof and safe?
Absolutely not. And that's part of the discussion that happened with all of this, is that we've seen the amount of hacking going on just rise exponentially. We've written on CNET many times that the idea of state-sponsored hacking, people like Chinese and the Russians and the Syrians even, have built these armies of hackers who have gone after everything from state secrets here in the United States to corporate secrets at companies. And so there is really no place on the Internet that's safe. And that's why partially the State Department described a lot of their very kind of what seems like crazy secure ways of doing things, like you aren't allowed to use a mobile device, right? These types of things that they were doing for most of their people, they seemed very onerous, but a lot of it seemed to be built around this idea that there are only some ways that we can guarantee your safety and the safety of the communications. Now, obviously, the whole world doesn't work that way. We live on mobile devices these days. The president himself has a BlackBerry. And so there is a lot of stuff that, you know, we've got these limits of what technology can do to keep us safe, and then what we need to do to get jobs done. And those things are butting up against each other, which is what really caused a lot of these problems.
So you could get somebody to build firewall after firewall after firewall, but the bottom line is, at the end of it all, you're never going to be 100% safe. That's impossible.
Well, software is built by humans, and humans are fallible, right?
Yeah.
And that's just the bottom line of it. And so there is no guarantee that you're going to be able to build software that doesn't have holes somewhere. And that's just the reality of it. There are new technologies being built that use stuff like artificial intelligence and other things to try and cut down on what could possibly be a hole in the system. And there are hackers out there, which we call white hat hackers, who are good guys, who actually go around and use their skills to help companies find holes before the bad guys find them. And then there are even people out there who are like Facebook and Yahoo, who pay hackers to tell them about the holes they find before they use them in bad ways. And so there are a lot of attempts out there to try and solve these problems, but it's still not a guarantee 100%. There's always going to be something that's bad, and that's just part of dealing with the Internet. And that's part of why there are parts of the government that don't even use the Internet that we use, because they don't trust it enough to use that. But that's not how all the government functions, and that's part of why we have these problems.
Well, and yeah, we could head back to the days of the file cabinet and the copy machine and the fax machine and all those kind of things. And
but
and you
it's
know
not
that,
even that.
Well, wait, but Ian,
think about this. Like the we had the people over at the Veterans Administration, the VA, lost laptops decades ago. You remember this?
Yeah.
It
yeah.
had files and files of people's Social Security numbers.
Yeah.
In. That wasn't an Internet problem. That
yeah.
wasn't a hacking problem. So these things, at the end of the day, you can't control this stuff. And back in the 60s, before we had the Internet, people were file copying stuff, and they were showing up with tiny cameras There's just no way to keep things 100% secure. That's what it comes down to.
Yeah, you're right. I mean, where there's an intent, people are going to find a way. And if humans are building it, they can definitely crack it. But you wonder what the takeaway from this. And I don't mean the campaign. Obviously, they're going to use it against you that she's careless and, you know, and that she's not paying attention enough and is going to put the country at risk. But yeah, Hillary Clinton has been around long enough and in on a lot of those briefings. She knows what is secure and what isn't secure. And so where do you think we go from here? Because she should have known. I mean, I know she should have known better. Do you think it's going to change the policy? Do you think the public's going to say, like, well, then maybe you can't. You just really can't, because it seemed like there was some commingling of the streams of the communications, of the emails, right, where she was using both of those servers and email chains at the same time.
Well, look, it's not my place to judge, but I think what it comes down to is that the State Department has already closed this loophole. So one of the things that came up in this investigation, and I'm not a political expert, but I know a few things about this, is that there were previous secretaries of state who also used their own email service and didn't use the State Department. And it was after she left that they really started saying, no more, we can't allow this. And so they've already solved part of these problems. But there's a larger problem as well, which is how does super secret parts of the government do their job when they're in the field, when they're not allowed to use mobile devices? That's a huge problem. And this is beyond just using State Department servers. This is about how can we trust to keep information safe? And what the government is grappling with, and what's really the larger problem here, is that there is no guarantee of safety. And so what level of lack of safety are we willing to go to do this? I have met executives at high power Fortune 50 companies, some of the most powerful and the biggest companies in the world, who when they travel to other countries, they don't bring their own devices because they expect them to be hacked just by nature of being on other wireless networks. So you have to really think about the reality of the situation throughout the world is that this stuff is a huge problem. It's not just about Hillary Clinton. It's something that everyone is confronting.
Ian, let's switch gears a little bit. Tesla had a really rough week, a horrible accident in one of their self-driving cars. A man died. What can you tell us about that story?
Yeah, so this happened last week. There was a driver in Florida who was using the Tesla. You may have heard that they rolled out this ability to do self-driving, but they said, you know, look, that we have this. It's in what is called beta, right, which means it's not fully finished.
Yeah.
And that we can't guarantee that it's 100% trustworthy. And there had been people who went on YouTube with videos of them using it in ways that Tesla did not recommend and almost getting in accidents. And so, you know, as Tesla always says, when you use the self-driving feature, you need to have both hands on the wheel and you need to be watching the road. You can't just suddenly take a nap or start watching a movie. And so it seems as though this driver in Florida, who had almost gotten in an accident before and actually put it on YouTube like a week ago, that he actually got in an accident and died. And it's very clear that the device, that the Tesla was in self-driving mode. And so now Tesla is confronting this problem of, even though they told people do not use it this way, a lot of people are, and it's causing, you know, we have the first fatality with it. And there's a lot of other questions, too. How does the government respond? How do lawyers get involved? Who's responsible? All of these questions are starting to pop up, and it's forcing Tesla to really confront the reality of its limits, of the limits of technology, of the limits of what is going on right now. And that's a really fascinating story.
I know they said there was a warning, even though it's a self-driving car, you got to keep your hands on the steering wheel and pay attention. But ultimately, their goal is that not to be the case, right, where you can do other things while you're driving.
Well, they haven't said that. What they've said is that, you know, and we've written on it, on CNET many times about this, what they are focusing on is making it so that the car is as safe as possible. They believe, and all of the testing shows, that in most situations, the cars are better drivers than we are. And they are able to detect and protect us in ways that we never can. And I've seen this. I've seen cars go down the road, and they see someone who's kind of sitting between two cars that's ready to jump into the street. And they see that person, because their feet are visible under the car, faster than a human would. But the problem is that there's still limits to this technology and how much we can trust it. And Tesla, in this case, said that the brightness of the vehicle next to the Tesla and the sky were too much of the same color and it didn't see it, right? So there are still things that are going on that are not perfect. And that's part of why they say, look, we can't trust this technology 100%. Sounds like the last story we talked about, right?
Right.
You can't trust this technology 100%. So you need to make sure that you're aware of everything going on before that. Eventually, the promise that Detroit and the rest of the auto industry has kind of suggested is that we may be in the future where we can take naps while we're on our way to work. That's not something that they've guaranteed or even said that they're really going to offer anytime soon. Almost everybody still has a wheel in their cars, and they still force you to make sure that you're involved. Even the test cars from Google have wheels in them, even though they said maybe we don't need them. They ended up putting wheels back in them because they know we just need to make sure that it is safe.
Yeah, the standard that's out there seems impossible, and we mentioned it before, and you mentioned the other story, right? If humans are building it, there's going to be some level of failure, but maybe that's the way that it should be presented from the get-go, is that as safe as this is, it's not perfect, but neither are you. This is safer than you are. You know, planes, it's the safest way to travel, but they crash. We accept that, you know, and cars and accidents. Maybe they should say we're never going to achieve, you know, 100% perfection.
Well, they actually are, and they've said this many times. As we mentioned during the Tesla, when they rolled it out, they said, you cannot trust this. You need to keep your hands on the wheel. Everyone else actually has this technology today. Almost every auto manufacturer could roll out a self-driving car right now, but they're not doing it because they don't think it's ready. And so instead, what they're doing is they're layering in safety technology into your cars. A lot of us now have cars with lane departure warning systems. That's actually a self-driving feature, mm-hmm. right? But what mm-hmm. they've done is that they've taken it out of the self-driving and they put it in your car and they say it's a safety feature instead. You still have to drive, right? So they're layering these little features on and on. One of the most popular things you see on all the ads now is collision detection, right? Keep your car from rear-ending another car. That's another self-driving feature that they've layered into your cars. So they're doing this in a very strategic way. And over time, you're going to have a car that nearly is able to drive itself. But think about it this way. Almost every airplane that goes into the air today, most of the time that you're flying, it's by a computer.
Sure.
Most of the pilots are not flying those airplanes anymore. Even takeoff and landing, a lot of times it's starting to happen by computer. So why do they still have pilots? Because we can't trust it 100%. That's
absolutely
what it always comes down to.
Ian, thanks so much. We appreciate it. Have a great rest of the week. It's Ian Schur, executive editor over at CNET News. We'll take a quick break and then get the news from Ryan. Stick around, Bill and Dane in for Wendy on WGN. That beautiful voice you hear is that of Juliana Zobrist. She is live in studio with us right now. Her new album, her new CD, Shatterproof, just came out on Friday. She's here along with Brian Ward to play a song or two for us. Thank you very much for being here.
Thanks for having
really,
me.
Really, really appreciate this.
Yeah.
I want to just get this out of the way really, really quickly.
What?
You're married to somebody who's having a banner year for the Chicago Cubs,
my
Ben Zobrist,
goodness,
the second baseman.
It. Can you believe it?
No.
It's
I can't
so
believe
exciting.
It. You have to understand.
I've got every limb crossed. all
she's ambidextrous.
I am.
You have to understand, for people like Dane and myself who have spent a lifetime cheering on the Cubs, and it's just been futility year after year after year, mm-hmm. to see them be the best team in baseball, to see them be the best pitching team and the best hitting team, and just do what they've been able to do, we can't believe it.
I know it. I know it. It's so exciting. It's so fun to see somebody that I have gotten to see behind the curtain work so hard.
Yeah.
Every day of his career without fail, and just to watch those boxes being checked off in his career. So, you know, I'm ecstatic for him.
Well, and as a guy that comes in as, you know, not only so versatile, he can do almost anything, but a great team player, but almost kind of like a free agent World Series winner guy, right? Because there was such a drought in Kansas City.
Yes.
An amazing city that they loved. And you times this not only by size, but just drought. And, you know, and of course, the reputation as perennial soul crushing losers.
Yeah.
To bring a World Series here is great. So, does he have, like a lot of the other players, asking him, you know, what was it like, you know, those intangibles to winning it all?
You know, I'm not sure what the players have asked him. I do know that he did bring his World Series ring into the clubhouse once.
It's like, nobody's
just
got
to
one of
taunt
these.
Them, just to be like, guys, we can do this. Right. You need one of these, right?
he grew up, or he was born in Eureka, Illinois. Is that where he's from originally?
It's about 2 hours from here.
So was he a Cubs fan as a kid or not?
He actually was a Cardinals fan.
Was he really?
Yeah, their family was okay, completely divided. It was West Side Story up in the Zobrist house when we signed with the Cubs.
Wow, I can imagine.
Yeah.
How did you guys meet, Juliana? What happened there?
We met when I was in high school. I was a junior in high school, and yeah, I know.
Wow.
I always get the deer in the headlights.
Wow.
Yeah, junior in high school, he asked for my number, and I said no. And then it was a couple years of talking, and he played baseball with my brother-in-law, then he played baseball with my brother, so my whole family loved him. And then
he's a little bit older than you.
He is a little bit older.
A little bit
than
older.
Me.
Okay.
I love to make fun of him.
But when you know it's right.
You know it's right, it's right.
You gotta pick and choose.
We started dating. We've been married now for 10.5 years. We've been together for it feels like forever.
That's so nice. Yeah. That's so nice. And the kid, I know you have 3 kids.
Yes.
They all have very interesting names.
They do. We have Zion, who's our 7-year-old, who is here today with me, which is so fun.
Yeah. Hi, Zion. Nice to see you.
He's taking pictures. We have a 4-year-old little girl named Cruz and then a 7-month-old named Blaze.
Beautiful names.
Thank
all three.
You.
Who did you pick the names or did Ben pick the names?
Oh, we picked them together.
Together?
Yeah.
Oh, very, very nice. We're going to ask you to do a song for us, and it's off the new CD that just came on Friday.
Yes.
It's your first full-length CD. You've done EPs in the past. Other than the obvious, which is, well, there's more songs, Bill. I get that. But what's the difference between putting together a full-length CD as opposed to an EP?
Basically, number of songs. But it was a longer journey for me. It was, every nap time deciding to sit down and write, and every spare moment that I had, exercising my brain and and thinking up more and more songs and what I wanted to say. And every song that I write, I've written because of something that's happened in our lives. So it's
nice.
A very personal story. The whole record is, and it's kind of a journey. That even the way that you lay out the songs is sort of a journey, a walk through what I'm learning. So it's exciting.
What's the first song we're going to hear?
We are going to play Always the Same for you today.
Beautiful. All right, here it is. It's Juliana Zobrist along with Brian Ward on guitar. Good luck, guys.
Gonna take a little courage, a little faith to face the fear inside. It's gonna take a little praying, a little waiting before you see the light. It's gonna take a lot of trusting, some releasing, surrendering control. Still
feel strong enough to save your pay than even mountains, and he still does today, cause our God is always, always, always the same.
Wow. Ooh. Wow. Unbelievable. That's Juliana Zobrist. Her new album is Shatterproof. Just came out on Friday. The best way to get this, Juliana, is what? How can people get this CD?
iTunes, Amazon. Yeah.
iTunes and Amazon are your best bets. Also, her website, julianazobrist.com, for more information. We'll be back in just a little bit. It's Bill Left along with Dane Neal on WGN. Juliana Zobrist is live in studio with us. Her new album, Shatterproof, just came out on Friday. Go to julianazobrist.com for more information. I keep saying album. Is it album? Is it CD? I don't know if kids will know what I'm talking about if I say album. Will they?
The crazy kids.
Yes, they will.
They will know. I hope so.
You know what? In your life, and certainly in the music, like, you know, faith is such a central element. And, of course, family.
Yeah.
As well as it is in these songs, and it was absolutely great. But we have Zion in studio, and he was singing along with you. Is there any thought process, like, down the road, you know, have the kids involved? I mean, you guys do everything as a family. Have them involved with some of the background singing?
I know. Wouldn't that be so fun? I mean, that's up to them. If it's whatever they feel passionate about, what they want to do, we want to encourage them on their own life, on their own journey. We're all very different, and we don't in any way want to make them feel pressured to follow in anybody's
footsteps. I think he was inspired. He was like chiming in. I'm sure he's familiar with the process as you were recording the album, right?
Yeah, very. Yes.
I tried to convince Barbara Mandrell that I was one of her sisters, and I toured with her for 3 years. Best 3 years of my life. She hated it, but boy, do we have fun. Does Ben sing at all?
I mean, he does.
Does he? How does he sound? Does he sound good?
I mean... Next question. No,
you don't want to say. You don't have to say.
No, he's fine. I do think he has a really great ear. He would never want to be up on stage ever. But,
really? Yeah.
And I don't think I would invite him on this stage, but, other than for just looking amazing.
Sure.
Standing up there
with his World Series ring.
Yep.
But the connection that you guys have, and people are fans of everything that you do, and you guys are one kind of, you know, really awesome family unit. Do you find, as you know, social media or whatever, that you are bringing fans to Ben and maybe even the Cubs, and then maybe some of his fans on the baseball side, you know, are becoming fans of yours, you know, because of following him?
Yeah, I mean, it's hard to tell the chicken or the egg sometimes. Mm-hmm. But I did the other day at a show in New York, I had some people come up to me and be like, I didn't even realize you were married to him, and that's so cool, and now I'm gonna be a fan of his.
That's excellent.
So that's always kind of fun for people to be a fan of your family, you know, because that's the way that we see it. We're in it together.
Sure.
I mean, it's a we thing with baseball. It's a we thing with music. We couldn't do it without each other.
What if they won the World Series? And we're all hoping here in town that it happens.
Oh,
but what would that be like for you guys?
I would lose my mind.
Would you? Yeah.
I would lose my mind. I would probably just like pack a suitcase and sleep in Wrigley for like 5 days. I
mean, lose your mind after you're commissioned to write that kind of that song that everyone cries as they play the clips of everyone jumping in the champagne. Yeah. You've got to do one of those.
I need
right?
to be working on that right now, right? I do. Yeah, that would be so exciting.
Was the transition tough? He's played for, I think this is his fourth team, right? He played for Oakland and for Tampa Bay and mm-hmm. then for Kansas City and now Chicago.
Yes.
Is that rough knowing that on any given year you might be in a totally different city?
Rough, no. It's slightly unstable feeling. We never actually moved into a house in any of those other cities. We never bought a home.
No.
There was always sort of this, you know, cloud looming over that's like, at any given moment, you could be receiving a phone call that's saying, hey, you've been traded. And that happens. You know, we were walking onto the beach when we were with Oakland and got the phone call, hey, you've been traded to the Royals. Thanks so much for your time. And I mean, 3 hours later, you're getting on a plane.
Yeah.
What was that, you know, when you got the call and you guys knew you were coming to Chicago, the whole situation with the team, obviously a great fan base, you know, so he knew that this would be a fun place to play, but being reunited with Joe and knowing really that there was this real goal of trying to get something done. Wasn't it like, wow, this is going to be fun?
Yes, it has been a dream, and it has been even more than anything that I think we had in our heads. From everything, from the fan base to the nostalgia of playing for the Cubs to Wrigley Field to actually standing up at the end of the game and seeing Go Cubs Go, and I get to sing it at the top of my lungs, you know, instead of like being the wife of another team and being like, oh, can't sing it, but really want to, you know, like that feeling is magical. It's like a high school varsity football game every single game, because people are just so involved and invested, and you feel that from them. It's a pleasure to be a part of.
You've got everything going for you. I hope you know that. You've got a great music career going. You got three great kids. Your husband's playing for the Cubs. What else could you possibly want? That's great.
You guys, nothing.
A Grammy.
A Grammy would be all right. Grateful. Let's get you a Grammy.
I'm just grateful to be able to keep doing music as much as I can. You know,
that's great.
We prioritize and keep the family together, so it makes it challenging at times, but man, just to keep doing what you're loving and what's just you, what you feel like is you, is just such a gift.
No question. Can we get one more song out of you guys? Is that possible?
Yeah, that'd be awesome.
All right, what's the song?
We're going to sing for you The Dawn.
Oh, excellent. Yes. Okay, here goes. Juliana Zobrist.
I hear you. I see you. I know you. I am you. You wonder if you've lost it all. You wonder if you've hit the wall. Your dream has been broken. Your heart is wide open. You wonder if you still believe. Oh, if you'll ever find some peace. But you are never ruined, never too far gone. As long as you're still breathing, you can carry. So hold on to God's promise. Let hope become your song. As long as it's almost over, keep watching for the dawn. There's love for the lonely, 'cause you're not the only one who's wandered down this road. I'm here, I'll be your hand to hold. Let's walk on together. With Jesus, we'll never have to face the fear alone. Trust him, he will lead us home. And you are never ruined, never too far gone. As long as you're still breathing, you can carry on. Hold on to God's promise and let hope become your song. The night is almost over. Keep watching for the dawn. Oh, let the crushed bones rejoice. Let the heavy heart make a holy noise. Let the flood of mercy rain till the world is drowned in grace. Too far gone. As long as you're still breathing, you can carry on. So hold on to God's promise and let hope become your song. The night is almost over. Keep watching for the dawn. Keep watching for the dawn. Keep watching for the dawn.
Wow. Can you sing?
Nice.
Wow, can you sing? That's Juliana Zobrist. Unbelievable. So much fun to listen to.
Thank you.
The new album, Shatterproof, just came out on Friday. You can get it wherever CDs are sold. Go to Juliana's website. That's julianazobrist.com. Brian Ward, thank you to you, by the way. Great job on the guitar.
Yes, thank you, Brian.
So nice. Thanks, guys. Really appreciate it.
Loved
it.
You
sound amazing.
What a pleasure.
You sound amazing. Good luck to the Cubs the rest of the way, too.
Yeah, buddy.
We're all hopeful. All right, a quick break. News is next. Bill and Dane in for Wendy on WGN. Tim, thanks very much. Hi, it's me, Bill Leff. Wendy Snyder is off this week. She's on vacation in Nashville, Tennessee with her family. Dane Neal is sitting in for her today. I'm going to ask you, Dane, and you, Kim, a loaded question. This is a trick question.
Oh, boy.
So keep that in mind as I ask you this question. It is a trick question. Aren't you proud to be an American? It's a trick question. Remember that.
I am.
You are?
Typically proud
Kim,
to be.
Kim, you are as well, right?
Always.
We are. How could you not be proud to be an American? The thing that we like most about America is people's knowledge of the country. Now, yesterday was Independence Day. It was July the 4th. A day that it means a lot to anybody who is proud to be an American. And there's a guy out in San Diego, and his name is Mark Dice. What Mark is a media analyst. So what he does is he goes out and asks people pertinent questions about the day.
Like, how many states are there? 11?
That kind of thing. That exact kind of thing.
Right.
So he was stationed in San Diego, California, in a fairly affluent community, where he asked people questions about Independence Day and about the 4th of July. And their answers, as Alan Funt would say, would surprise you. Let's listen to some of this audio from Mark Dice out in San Diego as he asked people about the 4th of July.
What country famously broke away from England to start their own country in the late 1700s?
I have no idea, man. I don't know.
What are we celebrating on the 4th of July? Exactly?
Our independence.
A little more specific.
It's the day that we overtook the South, and it's the day that it's our independence. That's why we have the fire.
From the South.
From the South, exactly.
So it was the victor of the Civil War?
Yes.
4th of July?
Yes.
The Declaration of Independence was signed by who?
I don't know.
Just name one person.
Ted Kennedy. Abraham Lincoln? I don't know.
Sorry.
Not.
What year was that Declaration of
Independence? Was it 1964? 84?
Kev, stop there for just a second. Oh, I want to point something out about this girl in particular. This girl is incredibly beautiful, right? And she's there in San Diego.
That's what you're implying, Bill. Is with that, it's not necessary for her to know things.
No, no. Here's what I'm implying. If I, let's say, now this is a hypothetical universe that I'm not a part of, but let's say I was a guy who was unmarried and living in San Diego, and I met this girl, and it was that girl that we just heard
right.
who thought that Abraham Lincoln signed the Declaration of Independence in 1984.
Right.
All right. That would be what I like to refer to as a deal breaker. That even though I liked this girl a lot for many different reasons, as soon as I said to her, hey, I saw you on TV with this guy, and he asked you a question about the Declaration of Independence, and you said it was Abraham Lincoln who signed it in 1984, that would be the end of our relationship right then and there.
I don't think so, but I look at it in a different way. I think it is the opportunity for thousands upon thousands of teachable moments.
Sure it is.
As you shepherd her
sure it is.
Into,
yes.
into
yes.
intelligence.
All right, let's listen to more. Again, this is in San Diego. This is Mark Dice, a media analyst, getting people's take on what exactly it means about the 4th of July.
I don't know.
Oh, no.
1864?
1864.
I don't know.
This country, no wonder this country's in trouble.
Okay.
What country did we declare our independence from?
Help me, baby.
Nope, just you. You're on your own.
California.
California.
Yep, California.
From.
We declared independence from a certain country, which is why we celebrate 4th of July. What country was that?
I don't have no idea.
You're going to be celebrating, though?
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
But
oh,
you don't know what you're celebrating.
You're right. You're right.
Okay. That's tonight's homework.
Okay. Thank you.
Back in the late 1700s, when Jesse Ventura and John Wilkes Booth and the other founding fathers signed the Declaration of Independence, what year was that exactly?
Sometime in the 1700s, I'm not sure.
How many stars on this flag?
50-something?
Yep, he's right.
Well, what country did we declare independence from back in the 1770s?
I don't know.
You don't know?
How would anyone know that?
That's kind of the reason we celebrate the 4th of July.
I have no idea.
No idea, but you're still going to be celebrating.
I'm still going to celebrate.
Well, you should have your celebration revoked.
Because
you're
I don't know.
You're not allowed to celebrate. Yeah. Because I'm banning you now from
okay.
celebrating.
Well,
July.
I'm terrible.
What are we celebrating on the 4th of July exactly?
Independence Day?
Specifically?
I don't know. I'm so bad at this. Say Independence Day. Say when we won our independence.
From?
Those countries. You have this on camera too.
Name one of the founding fathers of America.
I don't want to do this.
You don't know? What year did we declare independence from Britain?
1773?
Yep.
73.
I don't know. Right.
I have no idea. Early.
Getting people's thoughts on what country we broke away from when we declared independence back in 1776.
<I'm good. laughs>
Didn't know. America celebrates the 4th of July.
Is it Independence Day when you got rid of Mother England, right?
Yes. We got foreigners that know.
This is a guy who's in from Italy.
Well, foreigners know why we celebrate it more than Americans.
Everybody loves to get rid of their, like, you know, like the colonizers. So it's always good.
That's incredible.
It's always good.
All right, Kev, you can stop there. The point I'm trying to make is this. Yeah.
I don't want to get criticized because I'm afraid you're going to ask me the questions.
No, I won't. I won't ask.
I mean, they were the same questions. It was like, so it's independence from what and which country? And there was a lot of...
And name one guy who signed it. And nobody... Well, you even... I don't know if you could pick this up, but he asks one woman and he throws out some names like Jesse Ventura and John Wilkes Booth. And she's just nodding like, well, yeah, everybody knows those.
That was a little tricky, Bill, because, you know, he's asking a question. He's building that into the question. She's meant to assume that these are facts that we can, you know, like, build off of. You
right.
know, and the other members of the Justice League. Right. Like, who signed it?
Right.
You know,
right.
I mean, that was a little tricky. The other ones were just, you know, when they said they broke away from California, he's like, no, broke away from, oh, okay.
Yeah, that puts it in perspective. Kim, you know, I've played these in the past. I've had a couple of these where I've played them, and I always marvel at the number of people. Like, you go, well, if I'm out there for an hour, I'm going to find one or two people that might not know these answers.
Is that the case?
But there's no shortage of people right. who don't know the answers. And I'm sure there are plenty of people that this guy Mark Dice interviewed that did know the answers. It wouldn't be entertaining to have people...
Well, and you remember, too, Jay Leno used to do that, and it was
jaywalking.
Amazing to me, the same kind of...
I know.
The same kind of answers people gave.
I know. And I had a friend who said, well, typical Californians, but I don't buy that.
No.
I don't blame this on the state of California. I would venture to say that if you went to any of the... What do we say? 50-something states? Did we just learn that the stars are... There's 50-something of them?
53.
If maybe. You went to 53 of all 53 of the states and you asked people these similar questions, you'd find boatloads of people who would just go, yeah, I'm bad at this kind of thing.
Well, I think also, too, is one thing we need to take into consideration is that we are, as a society, not universally dumb.
Right.
If you would ask those same people, who is the singer of the hit song Shake It Off, I bet more
know.
People would know that.
Yep. 847 says, well, these are products of our great school system. Maybe. 630 says, was this outside of a pot shop? No, it was not. It was in a very nice area in San Diego, California, where people of all races, colors, creeds, and religions were just walking down the street. He seemed to be stopping people at random and asking these questions. And as you heard, many people didn't know.
Here's the thing that I think you can also just... I think is a positive sign is that the people seemed ready to celebrate. There was a festive atmosphere built around, even if they were oblivious to why.
Right.
They planned on, right. on doing their, you know, patriotic right. duty and celebrating.
The line of questioning in almost every one of these is, do you know when it was signed? No, I do not. Do you know who signed it? No, I do not. Do you know what country we broke away from? No, I do not. Will you be celebrating? Absolutely.
You know it.
Absolutely.
Help
I'll
me with this, baby.
All right. Now, here's the question that I was wondering, because I watched this guy, Mark Price. He's got a bunch. He's got his own YouTube channel where he asks similar questions. My favorite one was, do you think the gun laws should be made stricter now that John Wilkes Booth has assassinated Jesus? That's my favorite one on his YouTube channel. He also asks people about Martin Luther King being added to Mount Rushmore and if that was a good move or not. And people all agreed that it was.
Sure.
Yeah, that was a great thing that we just did with adding him to Mount Rushmore. So my question is this. Is it just a sign of the times? Are we as a society just becoming dumber and that's okay? I mean, even though we all have computers at an arm's length 24 hours a day, we are dumber, aren't we, than we used to be?
I don't. Yeah, maybe it's a time period that history is taught in. Maybe when it's everybody's really young, or maybe there just isn't an emphasis on it. You know, as far as the importance of other things in the world or people's priorities. But it seems like these kind of questions. Maybe we're shocked because these are the kind of things you should know.
Right.
You know, not every regardless.
Not
of,
just should know, but you assume like when you're talking to people, you would assume that they would know those very very basic questions, wouldn't you? You would hope.
You would hope. So I think that's part of it. But they seem to all be kind of, you know, history related. And you're shocked that people don't know. Everybody's got different interests.
Right.
And sometimes people know a lot about one thing. Like, Bill, you know a lot about pop culture, television, candy.
Yeah.
You know, that a lot of people don't
important
know.
Stuff.
But you don't expect other people to know that.
Right.
You know, Independence Day, what's that about? You figure
right.
people have a grasp on.
You think people know the basics.
You would hope they would. On. You would hope. Listen to some of these texts. I love these. I'll only get to a couple of these really quick, and then we'll take a break. I'm sure that these are all Hillary supporters, said 708. The very next text, 620, says, well, these people are obviously Trump supporters, aren't they? So that just shows you.
Distrust of the other
Why
side.
Why does U.S. history have to boil down to presidential
I don't know.
Politics?
I'm not positive, but it does
This is
some.
In the past, people. What's happened's already happened.
I know.
The crazy thing is, I bet if you went through history and you asked those same questions to political candidates.
Yeah.
They would get some surprising wrong answers
as
well.
I bet. I'm sure. All right, let's take a quick break and then more discussion on this. You just heard this guy, Mark Dice, out in San Diego, ask a myriad of people some very basic questions, not get them right. What are your thoughts? 312-981-7200. It's Bill and Dane in for Wendy on WGN. All right, we just played for you some audio that is really, really, really disturbing. There's a man out in San Diego. He's a media analyst. His name is Mark Dice. And what Mark likes to do is go out with a microphone and a camera and ask people questions that you would think most Americans would know the answer to. You would be wrong when you would assume that. They didn't. They didn't know who we got our independence from. They didn't know what year it happened. They didn't know who signed it. All the questions having to do with Independence Day kind of botched.
You mentioned questions, Bill. You know, one thing I question is his motivation. It looks as though he's out to smear the American patriotic.
Sure
celebrant,
he is.
Right?
He's a communist.
Well, he's,
man is obviously a communist.
He's just trying to make us look bad as a people.
The texts are pouring in. We're at 312-981-7200. Most people also very disappointed in the people who were answering these questions. Somebody put that you could have asked the question, why does ISIS hate us, and then played that clip. And it would have answered that question. Yeah, I guess so.
Are you surprised, Bill, though, that the person, you know, the outside world seems to be more up on the history of the United States than like the guy visiting from Italy seemed to have a pretty good grasp on things.
It's really funny you say that. This text came in from 630. A naturalized citizen comes here more because they have to take a test and become a citizen. They want to be a citizen. Those to whom citizenship is given, it says, and this is true, this gets to your point, a lot of times, I think it was on this show a couple of years ago that we read the test that you would have to take to become American citizen, and I have to be honest.
And it was hard.
It was very difficult. Right. It really was, because it's stuff that even though we learned it, I remember learning most of that in high school and then never really refreshing it because I was born in the United States and they're never going to test me again. But it is stuff that I should kind of keep fresh in my head.
It's kind of like the comparison is the driver's test, you know, that rules
yeah,
of the road kind of test. You know,
true.
We all know it. We all, you know, drive around and seem to be doing a decent job. And but when you go back to that test, there's a lot of things like, what does this sign mean?
Right.
How many feet before here do you have to make a, you know, signals,
right,
you know, or whatever? There's a lot of things that you forget.
Right.
But I don't know if you could forget Independence Day, England. That was kind of big news.
Yeah, that's kind of basic. Now, somebody, 708er, texted in the fact that history isn't really stressed in school anymore. All I can say is this. One of my daughters is going to a school next year. She's going to a college in New York where, and I always thought that this was an absolute must when you graduated from college, that you had to take certain electives. There were a certain amount of math classes, of science classes, of history classes that you had to take to graduate. I learned that that's no longer the case, that you can graduate from college, that colleges have decided it's better to specialize. And if you're going into a profession where you don't really need math or you don't really need science or history, you don't have to take it in college. When I went to college, even though I wasn't going to be a historian or a mathematician, there was X amount of hours I had to take. But now when I've talked this over with friends of ours whose kids have gone through school, they go, oh, no, they changed that years ago. I'm not positive that's a good thing.
I think there should be some kind of basic general, but I don't know how you would get people to agree to do it, how you would, you know, administer that kind of education. Cause these are kind of the basic things. These are like third, fourth grade, fifth right. grade, you know, the kind of things, whether it sticks or not.
Right.
So you're assuming these people, and many of them just sounded like average everyday Americans, that they had to have learned it at some point. Maybe they weren't paying attention. I don't know. I don't know what to tell you. And I don't know exactly what it means. Cause there's people out there that could make a case that, you know, there's other more pertinent and more, you know, important information.
And to their profession, you mean? If they're going into a profession where science isn't stressed or math isn't stressed, I'm awful at science.
Information or knowledge that would be like necessary or helpful, you know, for their vocation or
right.
something.
Right.
But still, you think just the passing, kind of just, you know, knowledge of being a general American that this would, and plus it gets reinforced every year.
Right.
You know, this isn't like Halley's Comet, right? Once every 75 years, we need to know this. This happens every July 4th.
Now, the other thing that I thought of when I was hearing this tape yesterday of these people in San Diego not knowing who we got our independence from or who signed the Declaration of Independence or all that is, should there be a test for people to be able to vote for the president of the United States? Because everybody always stresses the fact, hey, I don't care who you're voting for, but get out there and vote. It's really important as an American that you get out there and vote. Should the people we just heard on that tape have the right to vote and decide who the president of the country is? I'm not sure that they do.
That is an excellent question. Should there be some baseline?
Yeah.
So that you, and I think you can make the case, so that you understand
the ramifications of who you're voting
for. What these
for.
People are going to be doing,
right.
the roles that they'll play, the impact they'll have,
yeah.
and that you should understand
exactly.
what it is you're voting for.
I wonder.
Otherwise, you get the Brett Tix vote.
right. All right. We'll take a quick break. We'll find out what Elise Klink has coming up on today's Wintrust Business Lunch. That's a moment away. It's Bill Leff and Dane Neal in for Wendy Snyder on WGN. I know usually there'd be music there, Kim. No need to panic. The music button
My
is
My heart always skips
don't
a beat, but
panic.
I saw you there. You don't want me to sing.
No. Actually, would that be okay? Would you do a selection for us?
What would you like to hear, Bill?
Just something
I've been
nice.
In the South all last week, so I could, you know.
Do that Dixie song.
Way down south in the land of
Cotton. Yeah, do that. People would love to hear that. Hi, everybody. It's myself, and then Dane Neal is filling in for Wendy, who took the music button with her on vacation. So at some point, we'll get some music for you, but it isn't here yet. A couple things. Oh, yeah.
And good luck to Wendy. We talked a little bit about it on Friday, that she is hoping to realize her dreams of a country music career.
It's what she's always dreamt
of. To be discovered, you've got to be there.
In Nashville, Tennessee.
Absolutely.
Right. So Mumford and Daughters is the group that she's with, and she's hoping to be a big hit out there in Tennessee.
It was kind of funny, Bill, because it was at that time, as we kind of in the era of the imminent press conferences, the Loretta Lynch was doing her press conference, or because it wasn't really a press, it was like inside the actor's studio. She sat there and laughed with the crowd. But of course, Loretta Lynn, not to be confused, famous country singing legend.
You know, I will say this, and people always get upset, but that's not my favorite kind of music is country music. If it's on, it's fine. I'll listen to it, but I wouldn't go out of my way. That said, as a kid, I always thought anytime Loretta Lynn would stop by The Tonight Show, she had my attention. I always thought she did a really nice job.
The shows of you know, maybe 20, maybe 30 years, you know, you had your hee-haws, right? There were a music-based entertainment show with kind of a country flair.
Right.
You mentioned to Juliana, I don't know if it was on the air or off the air, about the 3 years you spent with the Mandrell sisters.
Yes.
Right. And those were highly rated shows. I think the Gatlin brothers, didn't they have a show?
They did.
What happened to all that?
There was a time when Mel Tillis did crossover, like he started out. For people who don't remember Mel Tillis, this was the guy who stuttered a lot when he would speak, but when he would sing, there was no sign of it at all. I remember he was kind of a mainstay on television. He did a variety show.
Remember Buck Owens? And
well, that was one of the hosts of Hee Haw, was right? Buck Owens. But Mel Tillis was a host of a show with Susan Anton. It was called Mel and Susan Together for one summer. And it was two people who had no business having a show together, just somehow put together.
Refresh me. Like Susan Anton, I think, like giant blonde hair.
Yeah.
Right?
That's yeah.
it.
Very, she looked like a model, but at that point, she also had a singing career.
Gotcha.
And NBC said, well, we got two people who both want to sing. We should give them their own show.
And there it was.
The rest was TV history. The rest was absolute TV history. I noticed that today's show is very Cubs-centric. On the first half of the show, we had Juliana Zobrist, who is the wife of Cubs second baseman Ben Zobrist. I just want to tell people that later on in this half of the show, we're going to have a guy on. Don Miller is his name. He's a Chicago native, huge Cubs fan, and he's doing something in support of the Cubs that I think most of us would probably not do.
Or maybe some on the lady side, maybe physically unable to do.
Hopefully. Hopefully unable to do. Don is sporting half a beard in honor of the Cubs. The left side of his face has a full ZZ Top beard. The right side of his face is clean shaven. He will be on later on to explain himself.
And on the superstitious side, you know, people will do almost anything to support their team in whatever way they feel can make an impact. And you know, I'm kind of superstitious sometimes. And, you know, I've had times where you feel like you've got to, you know, you're watching, you've got to do, or maybe a lucky shirt or,
yeah, right,
or something that you have to do. And you wonder, you know, to what lengths Cub fans are doing. If anybody's got other ones, you know, 312-981-7200, things that they have done in support of their, or maybe are doing now. There may be, yeah, people with other shaving related, superstitions.
Sports and superstition almost go hand in hand. Even the players themselves, you'll see them do things like rally caps, or you always hear the story about how a guy will have a certain routine. If a pitcher has won three or four games in a row, he makes sure to have the same meal every day, wear the same t-shirt every day, do whatever, you know, to keep some sort of congruency. Even though we all know it's ridiculous that really doesn't do it, there, you get something in your head where you go, or maybe there is something to this.
And if it's not broke, don't fix it. And maybe don't change it. And if all things being equal, why not just continue to do it until that doesn't work? And then
you got to find something else.
Something new.
I've talked about this on the show a couple of times. And again, before I say it, I will preface it by saying, I know that this is ridiculous. I absolutely know this is silly, but I do it anyway. If I'm watching a game, like when the Blackhawks were during the playoff run, or even now with the Cubs and the Sox, that they're having, Cubs are having an amazing season, White Sox are having a decent season, but earlier they were really on fire. If I'm watching the game on one television set in my house, because there's one in the living room, there's one in the bedroom, there's one in the family room, if I'm watching the game on one of those sets, I somehow have convinced myself I can't switch to another TV. I have to continue
That's
watching the
lucky
game.
Television?
That's the lucky TV. When in reality, I know that the Cubs themselves aren't playing a certain way because I'm watching it on my family room television set. I've convinced myself it has something to do with it, but I know it doesn't.
You know, the aura, the power of the universe, you know,
yeah,
all that kind of karmic stuff.
Yeah.
I know it sounds absolutely crazy and there's no way that you could, but I sort of, and I know it doesn't make any sense, so I'm reinforcing that again and again, but you sort of do feel like, otherwise, you wouldn't do it.
Right.
You feel like somehow it adds something, even though that's impossible. But yeah. And then on the Wendy side, doesn't she have like a playoff bra or something?
She does.
That she would wear.
Yeah.
I mean, so superstition there on the clothes side.
Yep. She does. And if you drive past the studio here on Michigan Avenue and give her 75 cents, she'll show you.
Nice.
It's the weirdest thing. I was watching, you know, I'm a tennis fanatic, and I was watching a tennis match. This is 2 or 3 months ago. And one of the players had this thing that he would do where, before he would accept the serve, when he was not on the serving side, but he was on the receiving side, he would take his racket and he would touch the two corners of the service box. And I kept thinking to myself, that's all well and good, but if I'm the opposing player, that would really mess my head up, that I had to wait that extra couple of seconds before I served so that this guy could move forward, touch the left box, touch the right box, and then move back. That got to be a little bit much.
Well, and he may have superstitions that says, I've got to do this. This is how I feel like I'm ready to go, whether it's OCD or not.
Yeah.
But maybe, you know, on the opposing side, maybe it is actually helping because it is going to get in his head.
I think
like
that's
he's
it.
Putting the mojo on.
Yeah, I think that's it exactly. It's played off the other guy's head a little bit. All right, we'll take a quick break. Like I said, we have a lot coming up on the show, including Don Miller, a man who's going that extra yard to make sure that the Cubs get to the World Series. He'll be with us later on. It's Bill Leff and Dane Neal in for Wendy Snyder on WGN. All right, it is me, Bill Leff. I'm normally here. Wendy Snyder, who's also normally here, is not here. She's not here this week. But Dane Neal, who's here from time to time, is here, and he'll be here for a little bit tomorrow as well.
Yeah, it'll be kind of a 3-day Bill and Wendy visitation.
Oh, yeah, because you filled in for me
yesterday,
on Friday.
Oh, wait, even more days,
oh, yeah.
But this will be 3 consecutive contiguous days. You know, so we had the 4th of July, 1 to 3, then, of course, today, and then tomorrow, just our normal kind of visit.
If I was Cal Ripken Jr., would I be worried about my streak with you just piling up day after day after day?
No, I would not. Because Thursday, Friday, and well, however many days after that, I will not
You'll be
here.
Done. All right. So don't worry, Cal Ripken Jr. Everything is safe. Everything's fine.
Yeah.
All right. I want to share with you the strangest video that I saw over the 3-day weekend. I don't know what it is, but I get so curious. I'll see a headline on a video and I'll think, well, yeah, let's take a look at that. Sometimes I'm greatly surprised. Other times I can't believe I've wasted my time, but this was well worth it and I will describe it to you. The headline reads, "World's Worst Magician's Awful Trick Goes Badly Wrong on Live TV." I dare anybody to see that headline and not click on that. You want to see the world's worst magician have a terrible gaffe on national television, don't you?
Well, you figure the world's worst magician means this is a guy doing things at a very low level.
Right.
At a very high, very low level.
Right.
He's as bad as it gets. And so for any one of his tricks to be even, notably bad.
Yeah.
It's got to be pretty.
Something's there.
Pretty horrible.
Something's there. I will describe to you what happened. And if you want to see it for yourself, it will be on our Facebook page very, very soon. Go to Bill Leff and Wendy Snyder on Facebook and you can watch it for yourself. Now, because it's radio and you can't see it, normally I would play audio for you. However, the audio wouldn't make any sense because this happened on Polish television. It's all in Polish. I don't speak any Polish. I don't know that you do either.
I thought you were going to say it was just muffled screams. So
no, there's some of that. There's some of that. Let me describe the trick to you, and then I'll explain what went horribly wrong on television. There's a trick that's become something of a standard. I've seen a couple of other magicians do it, and I don't go out of my way to look for magic. And even me, a guy who doesn't do much to try to see magic, I've seen two other magicians do this trick, so I know
it's like
there.
Saw the lady in half. It's one of those common things. Everybody does it.
Yep.
Rabbit out of the hat,
yep.
Kind of thing.
It's becoming a standard. The way the trick is supposed to work is this. The magician has normally three bags, although this magician decided to use four bags. The bags are each about 10 or 11 inches high, and you can't see inside the bag. It's completely covered, so all you see is the fact that it's a bag, and that's it. The magician then shows that in one of the bags, he's going to put a steel spike that's about 5 or 6 inches, a very, very sharp steel spike. So that's in the bag, and then you seal the bag up, right? Then what he does is he mixes the bags up. You have one bag that has that 5 or 6 inch steel spike, and you have two, or in this case, three other bags with no steel spikes at all.
Anything in them at all?
No.
Okay.
Nothing. But they all stand tall. The way the bags are constructed is they stand tall, so you can't tell by looking at the bags which one does and which one doesn't have the steel
spike. So it isn't a cloth bag. Oftentimes, magicians have kind of floppy, silky bags.
Right.
But these are more like stand-up grocery-style bags.
Yeah.
Okay.
But they're only, like I said, they're 10 or 11 inches
gotcha.
High. All right. So the way, again, the trick is supposed to work is he seals up the bag that has the steel spike. He seals up all the bags. Then he does that kind of shell game where he moves the bags around. So you want to think you're keeping your eye on it, but it's hard because he's just shuffling them and shuffling them.
Right.
Like I said, usually done with three bags, this magician chose four bags. What then is supposed to happen is he says to a volunteer, pick one of the bags.
And throw yourself on it.
No. The magician takes his own hand and just smashes down on whatever bag the audience member has chosen. And he's fine because they've chosen one of the bags where there's no steel spike.
Right.
And then there's two bags left. And he goes, now choose another bag. And then you choose one, and he slams his hand down on that one and then shows you that the remaining bag has the steel spike and there's no bloodshed, right? Here's what went horribly wrong. He's got the four bags.
He did
bags.
All the bags?
No.
Wait, and the crowd's like, no, right. No.
No, that's one too. You've chosen one too many bags, what, horrible magician.
One more bag.
Doug Henning is not going to like this. So he mixes the bags up. He puts them behind his back and he mixes them up. Then he's on this Polish television show that's like a morning show. It's like what?
Like good
Morning America. It's a Good Morning Gdansk.
Right.
Good Morning Gdansk. So he goes to the two hosts. You got two hosts in the show, a male and a female. He says to the male host,
is this a behind a desk thing or are they sitting on couches?
They're all standing at like a mid-length table.
Oh, gotcha.
With the four bags.
Okay. Demo style.
So he says first to the female host, choose a bag, but he says it in Polish. I don't know how you say it. So then she chooses one, and he takes his hand, and he smashes the bag. Now we're down to three. So he says to the male host, you choose a bag, and he picks a bag.
The Matt Lauer of Poland.
The Matt Lauer of Poland. You, Matt Lauer of Poland, please choose a bag. And he points to one of the bags. Then the magician goes off course a little bit, and he takes the hand of the woman and smashes it down on the bag. And that's the bag that has the 5-inch steel spike in it.
That's why you sign a waiver for him, Bill.
Oh, man. She starts screaming like a bat. Like, imagine your hand going through a 5-inch steel spike. So she's making those sorts of noises.
And it for sure really happened, right?
It absolutely happened. Like, at first, I'm like, oh, this might be one of those Andy Kaufman-type stunts, but it was not, because they showed it in slow, they showed in slow motion. But the most peculiar part of all of this is the male host, who wants to keep the show moving, like, doesn't say, stop the cameras, or can we get you a compress or some ice? He's trying to figure out, like, what's going to happen next. He's looking at the other bags like, okay, you've already established
what
that
he's trying to figure out how can I prevent this from happening again?
Right.
This may limit my television opportunities.
It's bad enough to happen on our show one time, but what if this guy comes back and does this again? You just see him like he wants to keep, like, oh, that's too bad. You know, oh, it's so sad. Well, what do we do now? You know, he's looking around like, oh.
Was the spike still in her hand?
Yeah. And they're trying to figure out what to do, and she's screaming, and he's kind of embarrassed, which you should be.
Yes.
And then
this is embarrassing.
The producers of the show, the kind of statement they issued was that she's fine. She didn't need to be hospitalized. Don't worry. She's not in the hospital. But then they said that the trick did work in dress rehearsal, that they had done it earlier. They don't pay attention to the fact that right there on live TV, she had a giant spike driven through her hand. But in dress rehearsal, went off without a hitch.
Now, Bill, I know that there could be, you know, so, as far as like the language and some barriers on it, as far as the way that things are described. Was he billed as the worst magician?
No, no, they wouldn't. No.
Because then I'd have like a plexiglass shield and you'd be like, you just go over there.
Right. No, that's a great hook to have if you're thinking about being a magician.
Something crazy is going
to
happen.
People would come to see that. Yeah. Like, I remember when I was a kid, there used to be a place in Wisconsin that as you drove by them, it would say, the world's worst hamburgers. And you'd think, well, why would anyone go there? But then, like, the more you think about it, you go, but there's a curiosity factor. We're curious people.
I'll be the judge of that.
I'll see if that. I've had some pretty horrible bad hamburgers in my life. Let's see if they live up to the billing.
You know what, as hosts of things, and you see whenever they have magicians on, and I think invariably the host would probably try to, you know, they try to figure out what's going on, try to maybe to trick the magician. Was right. There any, with the Matt Lauer of Poland, and I'm air quoting, was there any thought that maybe he had kind of adjusted it, not knowing that he was going to take his co-host's hand and stab it, but that he was trying to like disrupt his thought process?
No, to the Matt Lauer of Poland, this was kind of business as usual. It's like, well, we live in a world where anything can happen, and that just proved it. What are we going to do next? That kind of feel.
Yeah, I'm not an expert on Polish television, but I have seen a lot, you know, the Sabato Gigante, and sometimes the
That's
things
a great
that
show.
That are humorous in one like television culture
right.
are a little shocking and disturbing to others. Like I've seen those where they have their version of America's Funniest Videos, yeah. where someone accidentally sits on a steak knife. Everyone,
they love
this
that
is crazy, right?
Yeah, no.
Or the Japanese ones; those are insane.
Even by Eastern European morning television standards, this was an extraordinary event. Although you wouldn't know it to look at that guy's face, the woman's face you would know.
We gotta have him back,
right? Right. What are you doing in 3 weeks? I want you back often. Oh, you're fantastic. Man. All right, we'll take a quick break, and then we have a lot more show for you. It's Bill Leff, and Dane Neal is filling in for Wendy Snyder on WGN. Thank you, Ryan. Bill Leff, and it's Dane Neal. Dane is filling in for Wendy. Wendy is off all this week. She's on vacation. Sometimes I like to say she's on special assignment.
People
see through that. She's on vacation. A couple of quick things. Number one, I was just telling you about the world's worst magician and his magic trick on Polish television that went horribly wrong. If you have not seen this yet, it is now available on our Facebook page. Go to Bill Leff and Wendy Snyder, and you can see for yourself.
Based on the acclaim, and then, of course, the potential for imminent and real-life danger.
Yeah.
Would he agree? I know the correspondents may not, but the best thing that ever happened to him. This
Maybe.
Is the best thing for his career.
Yeah, everybody now is watching his work.
Yep.
Yeah, you're right. You're right. It's sad but true.
It
Sometimes
is.
You succeed by failing.
In a big and right? painful, bloody way.
Yeah, in a big, bloody, painful way. I wanted to bring this up. I don't know if this is anyone else's situation, but it was my situation the other day, so I want to see if other people have experienced this or not. When I left here on Thursday, it was my anniversary. My wife and I.
Congratulations.
25th anniversary. Thank you very much. I mention that so that I will get extra congratulations and because it's pertinent to the story. We left directly from here, from the Tribune Tower. We left from here to go to Michigan. That's where we spent the next 2 days. So when we left here, I now drive a Jeep that has a GPS system as part of the car. I've never had a car that had a GPS system before. I know that they've been on the market for 10 years or so, but this is the first vehicle I've ever had that's had a GPS system. So I park kind of below ground level behind the Tribune Tower, and I put in the GPS where we were going in Michigan so that it would find the best. I knew that we were going to hit some traffic, but I thought this could save me some time somewhere along the line.
That's what it's for.
Yeah. Right. So I put in all the coordinates. But now here's what happened. Because I'm on essentially lower Wacker, it was reading me as being on upper Wacker, and it was telling me to turn places where streets did not exist. Like if I had turned where it told me to turn, I would have crashed into things on two different occasions. So my question is it, do I have an inferior GPS system, or does it just not understand if you're on a multi-level roadway? Does it not read you being in the right place? Because I think that's what happened to me.
And well, our question is, did you crash several
I did not
times?
Crash.
Okay, all right.
I did not crash, Ryan. Thank you for being concerned. But I live to tell the tale.
But, Ryan, it can get close sometimes. First off, the thought process is that, you know, the satellite is in space and it's looking down. It doesn't know that you're, you know, lower and lower and lower,
right,
or higher and higher. And so it doesn't necessarily know. But I think we have gotten, at least I have gotten to the point where I trust the GPS so much,
yeah,
that I'm looking at it sometimes, you know, off of your phone. I don't have one embedded in the car, and you're almost ready to like, I don't see it, but I know I've got to turn somewhere. Where, what am,
right,
I missing? And then you realize that it's not necessarily telling you the right thing here in the city. And I would be interested to see either different brands or what people have experienced. 312-981-7200. But even not only just the lower Wacker, lower Michigan, some of the tunnels, but even with the big buildings, it seems to throw things off. So you
does
have to kind of, well, it says I'm supposed to take a left here, but I know that's not right. So then you have to question it, but it's the buildings maybe affect the signals. I'm not sure.
I said to my wife in the car on Thursday, I'm really familiar with this area because I park down there every day. So obviously you can look somewhere because it's saying turn right, you know, and if I did, I would have crashed. But what if I was in a place where I wasn't familiar with the area? What if I was in some other city or state where I didn't know the ins and outs of the roadway system there? I mean, I guess you could just look up and go, there's a wall there. As persuasive as you sound, I'm not turning right there. But, it could have gone horribly wrong.
In this, you know, it has gone so far from the days where, you know, maybe I was a, you know, pizza delivery guy, flower, you know, where you had to really kind of know the town.
Yeah.
You couldn't just look on your phone, punch it in and go. But if you are in a different area where you are not familiar, you are completely dependent because no one carries maps anymore.
No,
and
I know.
Remember when MapQuest came out? Oh, that was amazing. It had actual directions. But
right,
before that, we all had to memorize everywhere we went and figure it out. But now we're so dependent and it's gotten so good. That's part of the reason is that we trust it is because it has gotten so good. As far as like letting us know, but how can it keep? And it's gotten to the point now, Bill, where it tells you where the traffic is. Like you said, you were hoping for the best route. So it's minute to minute.
Oh, yeah.
But sometimes, you know, there's road closures that aren't there, or this lane has been this, or there's something else going on.
Just minute to minute. It's second to second. Mine has, and I don't know if this is standard with other GPS systems because I only know my own, but it tells me in the lower right-hand corner all the time, there's a little box with a number that is the speed limit. And there are times where I'll be on a road where the speed limit is one thing, and then a second later, it's another. And it's reflected there on the GPS. Within that second, I'll be going, wow, I was just going 50. Now there's the sign that says 40. And it says it on my GPS at the exact same second. So it's that it quickly updates to the second.
And it's that kind of accuracy that makes it where you have this kind of built-in trust for it. There are times when my wife's had times where she is in a rural area and it sounds like in the middle of the street, pull over and proceed by foot.
Yeah.
And you're just like, well, you're pulling over like, I know you're telling me to do this, and I know you are the wise and powerful GPS, but I just don't feel this is the quickest way.
Isn't that crazy?
So you guys have fought with yours before.
Oh, yeah. That's standard. Isn't that standard?
Yeah, no, there's a way to get on the expressway by my house, and it always wants me to turn off and go down a local road to catch it a little bit further down the road. And I always say, no, I'm not, you know.
Ryan, we have that actually, same thing by us, I've by Old Orchard Road.
I was trailing a truck, and the truck did the same thing that Surrey said to do, and I said, you know what, we're going to test this thing out. So I ended up beating the truck onto the expressway by, like, you know, 10 yards, and I think I won.
There's all kinds of calls loading up. We're 312-981-7200. My GPS didn't do exactly what it needed to do. I was smart enough to not take a right where there was a giant wall there.
Very wise.
But I could see where things could go awry. Bob, you have a similar story, don't you?
I do. I happen to work for a towing company on the weekend, and we do police tows for the community. So, and on Saturdays, that's usually when all the fun ones from Friday night come on in. So, here's the story. Guy is half in the bag, late on a Friday night, early Saturday morning. He's following his GPS home. His GPS says, turn here, and he does, and it turns out it was somebody's driveway.
Oh, no.
Goes up the guy's driveway, goes up and over the flower bed in the backyard.
Oh, no.
Turns around in the backyard, probably because he ran out of road, and proceeds to go back down the driveway. Guy calls the owner of the home, contacts the local police department, and they show up, and they are now taking the report and so on and so forth. As the story goes, the cop, you know, like when we were in kids and the crossing guard would, you know, hold their arm out to not let you go into traffic.
Sure.
Cop does that to the owner of the home. Here comes the same car. Up the same
I got it this time.
Up and over the flower bed again, figuring he didn't take the road all the way, and proceeds to go blasting through the guy's fence in the back of his house.
That's terrible.
I thought it was quite funny, and when his folks came in, I basically said, you've got to be very proud of yourself.
Sure.
And I just thought I would share that, hence I do not trust GPS.
No, I guess you can't. Thank you, Bob.
Thank you.
Have a great day.
And the strange thing is he probably won a lawsuit against the GPS company for steering him wrong.
Well, I was wondering that. Like, if you have a terrible accident, if you could absolutely prove that it was the GPS that led you to do that, although I guess their argument is you've got two eyes, right? You could see that there was a wall. You could see there was a house in this. Now, did they keep saying as he's driving through the house, recalculating route? Because mine keeps saying that the whole time I'm
proceed.
Driving.
Your destination is on the right.
Recalculating route. I'm going to crash into a house. That's all right. You'll get there faster. All right, your thoughts on this. I was on Lower Wacker where my GPS was a little bit wrong. Have you had a similar instance? We're at 312-981-7200. More after this. It's Bill Leff and Dane Neal in for Wendy Snyder on WGN. It's Bill Leff along with Dane Neal, who is filling in for Wendy Snyder. Wendy's out all week. She'll be back next week. Let me quickly catch you up if you're just joining us. On Thursday after the show, my wife and I drove from here, from the Tribune Tower, to Michigan for our anniversary. And as we get in the car, I punch in the coordinates for where we're going in Michigan.
You're still like James T. Kirk with that. I punch in the coordinates.
Uhura, punch up. Punch up Michigan. So we started out fine. It told me where to exit the parking lot, but I could have figured that out on my own. I went to college. And then it told us to take a right-hand turn, which was a brick wall. Not a brick wall, like a metal wall. Whatever kind of wall it is, we would have been
an
crushed
impassable,
like bugs.
Obstructive wall.
I can't drive through a wall in my car. So then we realized that's not our best move, and we got on track, and then we went, I think we want to turn here off of Grant. No, we want to turn here, and then it told me to take another right-hand turn also into a wall. It's a good thing I have a defiant behavior. We've been smashed. So the question is this, why can't a GPS figure out? My guess was it's because there were different levels. It's Lower Wacker, so it was probably reading me as being above on Upper Wacker.
Correct.
Where a right-hand turn would have been the thing to do. But on Lower Wacker, it would have done serious damage to myself and my loved ones.
So it has to have not only just the kind of the global positioning, but also a depth perspective to understand like how far close to the Earth's crust you are or aren't.
But shouldn't they have figured that out? That's a major component. I know there's other places where there's roadways above and below. Wacker's not the only street in the world has that.
I can tell you that Fitbits can count your steps. So when you're going up different elevations, it's able to count that way.
Although, I hate to burst your bubble, Ryan, but that's been proved to be incredibly inaccurate. You know that, right?
I did hear that.
The Fitbit isn't quite as accurate as we were led to believe.
Yeah, you just shake it. That's what it does.
Yeah.
It just does or it doesn't. Well, they are, I mean, on the accuracy side, they are completely different. You know, whether it's my wife's, she's got an Apple product, and we've got like a Samsung something. And this is actually the most accurate, like it or not, GPS that I've ever had. I've almost liked the GPSs before where you could put them in and it says what time you're supposed to get there. But you know, if you make this light, if you don't hit this traffic,
you can beat their score.
Yeah, you can kind of improve, you know, the outcome there. But the one that I've got on mine, it is right on.
It's that good.
So if you've got a 2-hour trip and you know that, you're already late. Even before you leave, you said, dead man walking.
Does it say, like, you can make this left turn? You can do it.
Come on, you can
yellow.
Do it, Dane.
You got this. You got this.
You know, occasionally.
It's turning yellow, but you can make this light.
If you have one of those things, like on, you know, coming in on the 290, they've got that kind of that Mannheim extension thing where you can bypass some traffic. You can kind of get some considerations there and if things open up. But it knows to the minute where there's an accident or there's a stall. It's bad because you can't. You know, it's like Ebenezer Scrooge. Like, is this the way it's supposed to be or just the way? Nope, that's just it.
I like the idea of pulling up to, you know, the expressway, the express lane split and just going, what do I do?
Right.
Local?
Right.
It should have that feature. Siri, help me out. GPS, help me out. What do I do?
And how many times, and maybe it's just me.
You got to make a decision, like right then, you know?
Where you punch it up, you're leaving maybe a driveway and you're punching it, but it hasn't kind of registered yet, like which way you're supposed to go. So you're kind of creeping into traffic, not sure if you're going right or left. Yeah, it's just wrong.
I've told Wendy this. You have not sat there during this. When I first got this car, and again, it's my first GPS system, in the upper right-hand corner, it gives what you just described, which is an estimate on when your arrival time would be. But what it says is, it says a number and then H for hours, and then another number for minutes. So I always thought it was saying, like if I was going from here to someplace, I thought it would be like, because it would say 18 and then OH, and I'd go, 18 minutes. I thought it was reading it as 18 minutes, but it was really hours and minutes. But just the way it was 0 hours is OH. So I was reading it as, like it was just kind of calculating.
around
20 minutes.
Give or take.
It was 0 hours. All right, 312-981-7200 is our phone. If you have any questions or comments, let's start out with Mike. Mike, you've experienced this. You know a little something about this?
Well, the one thing that I noticed is that most of the time it's right, but that can lull you into a false sense of security.
Sure.
And the other thing, too, is this is the same technology that they're basing those cars that now drive themselves, and people are going to rely on that. Well, imagine if you were driving on Laura Wacker and the car was making decisions for you.
Okay, that's scary. That's really scary then. And, you know, we talked about this earlier. Tesla just had their first fatality with one of those self-driving cars a few days ago. So the timing on that couldn't be worse. Thanks, Mike. Appreciate the call. Let me get one more in really quick. Kevin?
Yes, sir.
Hi, go ahead. It's your turn. What's up?
Well, hey, my faith was renewed in GPS. I used Google Maps a lot traveling to Wisconsin Dells for softball a couple weekends ago, and my daughter was anxious, how long is this going to take? And it told us, like you were talking, 2 hours and so many minutes. And then we noticed my wife and I jumped to 3 hours, then 4 hours and a half. We're like, what's happening? And it rerouted us, told us there was an accident, take this path. Took us through the Wisconsin countryside. And sure enough, 2 hours later, we arrived at the Dells to our tournament. While we waited for the other teams and even an umpire stuck outside of Madison in a 2.5 hour delay for an accident.
That saved you.
Google Maps redeemed itself with me just here recently.
See, that is neat. And occasionally, yes, it does pop up like a quicker route is now available.
Yeah.
Would you like to consider it? And then you can do that. And sometimes it will route you locally around if there's an accident on the expressway or something. But it doesn't necessarily tell you, you know, it'll take you through the area, but, you know, that area could have its own issues, too. So you kind of got to fend for yourself
right.
a little bit. Yeah.
Right. And yours is probably set up, Kevin, when it shows you your route. Mine has like a red line, like where the street usually is yellow, but there'll be a red line showing that there's heavy traffic. Yours is set up that way too, right?
Yeah, that's the first thing we noticed, that something was wrong, and then they gave us this alternate route, and we chose to trust it. Took us through the Wisconsin countryside, and we were one of the few families that arrived on time.
You made it on time. Excellent. Well, that's good news. Well, thanks, Kevin. I appreciate it. Have a great day.
Thank you.
Thanks very much. Did you have, when you were a kid, whenever we would take a trip somewhere, like usually it was Florida or something, my parents were members of AAA, so they would tell them where we were going, and then we would get this large binder, and it was called a triptych. And what it was a bunch of pages, each of them about 20 miles long, that would show you the bend of the road and what roadway you would be on. And then you just kept flipping it over, much like they used to do on To Tell the Truth. Like every time somebody would guess something, they'd flip over another card. So it was usually my mom's job in the passenger seat or the navigator seat
to just keep moving it every 20 miles, which really it makes the trip to Florida go by like a breeze.
Like a breeze. Yeah. Or you'd have all of those maps, which never got folded back into kind of the pocket or sort of big pocket size. It would just be this huge mess and you'd have to look on the, and now when you say it, and obviously, you know, Columbus got here and we're getting
without a GPS.
Yeah. Everywhere. I mean, people have been getting from point A to point B for a long time, but doesn't it this is kind of like the weakening of at least our mental.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
Society, because you can't remember any phone numbers. Right. Remember, we used to have to remember every single phone number that you ever for not all your anymore. Friends, all your family. And then you have to remember like how to get places. I cannot even imagine trying to get someplace without GPS. I mean, as crazy as that sounds.
When I was a little kid, my biggest fear of driving wasn't crashing. It was I could never figure out how people remembered how to get everywhere they needed to go. Like, I don't know how many people you know or visit, but I'd always think to myself, how do my parents remember where everybody lives? But you just had to. That was it.
The power of the human mind, I guess, to kind of prioritize on things. The phone numbers are a big deal. Remember,
yeah, I know.
You had to have every single phone number of everyone that you knew memorized.
Sure.
And you didn't, not everybody had, you know, your grandma had a phone book. But
I had a date, not when I was a little kid, but through from college years for the next several years, up until a couple of years ago, I kept a date book that had a phone book in it.
Would that be the little black book?
Yeah, Bill's little black book. But not in that way, but just to have everybody's information.
Right, right.
But then, like, just a couple of years ago, because I'd go into Office Max and buy one every year, and they would laugh. They only had one in stock. It was for me. They didn't have anybody else. You're the last guy buying these, sir. Where's the one about Branson, Missouri? I got a great text about Branson, Missouri. Oh, here it is. 708 says, in Branson, Missouri, we were trying to find a restaurant. We had three GPS systems going, the car, the phone, and a handheld. We were at an intersection. One told me to go straight. One told me to go right. The third one told me to go left.
How is that possible?
You'd think
there would be one quickest way to get there.
Right.
Well, I mean, not just it's up for discussion between the computers of the world.
I know, because we've been in situations where I've had my car GPS going and one of my daughters will have it on their phone and it's been not completely different routes, not one left, one right, but they'll tell us ways that are vary against the other. So I don't know.
And it's gotten so advanced now that not only do you put in, you know, the address or the street coordinates or the name of the city, now you can put in the name of anything.
Yeah.
Like you could put in, you know, I want to go to, you know, Chili's, and
yeah,
it'll bring up the 20 Chili's and
right.
You just tap on it and it'll just give you directions right there. I mean, it's pretty amazing.
Oh, mine has this feature. And again, if everybody's do this, I'm sorry. This is the only GPS I'm familiar with, but you could put in just like French restaurant and it'll tell you French restaurants 300 miles from here. It'll give you ones in Iowa that you just go, well, I didn't have that big of a commitment originally, but if that's where the food is,
I'll take me there.
I'll go, yeah.
This location sponsored by the Iowa Tourism Bureau.
Right. Coincidence? All right, we'll take a quick break. Ryan has the news for you, and then a guy with an incredible devotion to the Chicago Cubs. Wait till you find out what his story is. It's Bill Leff and Dane Neal in for Wendy Snyder on WGN. Yeah, throw the headphones on. People may want to talk to you, and it'll make Dane and me sound better to you.
Yes.
Don Miller is the voice you're hearing right there. Don is a huge, and I repeat, huge, huge Cubs fan. And what better year to be a Cubs fan than this, 2016, where they have the best record in all of baseball. Don has done something that few of us would even dare to attempt. We'll explain what that is in just a little bit. But first, Don, thank you very much for being here.
Well, thank you very much for bringing me on to the world's greatest network.
Oh, we're proud to have you.
Did Franklin McCormick sit around here someplace?
Yeah, Franklin McCormick, one of the pioneers of radio, used to sit right where you're sitting.
Are you kidding me?
I wouldn't kid you.
Uh-oh.
I wouldn't kid you.
He died in his chair.
In that chair.
When he was 65 years old.
Yes, he did.
Oh, my God.
You have nothing to worry about. Okay. You're fine. You're okay. Fine.
And Don, get up closer to that microphone so everyone can hear you.
There, oh, that's better. That's better. All right, be honest with me. Did you ever in your lifetime think, and I know you've been a Cubs fan for a long, long time, did you ever think we'd be experiencing what we're experiencing right now with the Chicago Cubs?
Absolutely not.
Nope.
It's unreal. Ungottlich. That's unbelievable in German. Sorry about that.
That's all right. That's okay. But it's amazing, right? They have the best record in baseball. They're odds-on favorite in Las Vegas to be the World Series champions.
I know. 2 years ago, they were in last place.
Yeah.
And then Joe brought them up into the playoffs. Unbelievable. So I had a premonition that this is going to be the year. We're going to do it.
Let's hope so.
Well, Don, they were also in last place 3 years ago, 4 years ago, and 5 years ago as
all
well.
All right.
They lost 101 games 3 years ago.
I know.
101 games.
And you know what? I was wearing my Cubs shirts inside out and backwards. Okay.
Now, to put that in perspective, that year that they lost 101 games, yeah. they won 61 games. As of today, halfway through the season, they've won 52 games.
I know.
So we've already won almost as many games in a half a season as they won the whole year that year.
Yes.
How about that?
That's unbelievable.
What do you think turned it around?
Joe, naturally.
Is it Joe Madden, their manager?
Joe Madden, the manager.
Yeah.
I like his I like the fact that he's got these young kids in there. He got rid of the prima donnas. Okay, sorry about that.
That's all right.
And brought these kids in there like college kids. You know how college kids have more push into it?
Sure.
They want to win. And that's what I think has done it.
That's the attitude.
They've got, as they say in the business, moxie, right? And,
yes.
And here's the thing, too, is but as a longstanding Cubs fan who have felt, you know, all of the disappointments of a century of losing, is there's always waiting for that other shoe to drop. You think, oh, they're just going to get with so much expectation and so much potential that – this would be really sad to have them kind of blow it here.
Yes.
But that's why you're doing what you're doing, to prevent that.
I'm trying to remove the curse that was placed upon the Cubs in 1945, October 6th, when Billy tried to brought this gold into Wrigley Field and snowing up the place, and all those people paid big bucks.
I ask you about that? Because we've heard that legend.
Yes.
This is the Sienis family who own the Billy Goat Tavern across the street. Mm-hmm. They decided, and why wouldn't you, I guess, if you're going to a baseball game, you'd want to bring a goat with you. That just makes perfect sense, right?
Sure.
So they told him over at Wrigley, sir, unfortunately, we're not quite equipped to allow goats into Wrigley Field, and that was the beginning of the end. That was the curse, huh?
It's a curse, of course. You know what? I had this premonition that the Cubs were going to win the World Series, and I happened to be looking at a Tribune, at the advertisement of Bic Shaven Blades.
Yes.
And there was this young guy that had one side of his head was nicely shaved and combed. His other side was completely disheveled. I said, whoa, hey, that would be cool. So I said, I think I'll do it. I won't shave one side of my head until the Cubs win the World Series.
Yeah.
It's that kind of commitment, I think, that sets Cubs fans apart.
Yeah. So that's what's going on with you right now.
Yes.
The left side of your face is a little on the scruffy side. You have a beard, a mustache, and your hair. And then on the right side, you're completely shaved. How about that? That looks unusual.
Elvis would say thank you very much.
You look great. So when you decided to do this, this was prior to the season?
Right. I looked like a bowling ball. Except bowling balls don't have a mouth. But I looked like a bowling ball. And I always shaved everything. And I said,
that's too much information, but go ahead.
I'm sorry about that.
That's all right.
You just feel just free and easy.
Yeah.
Comfortable.
Yeah. So this was at the very beginning of the season.
Very beginning.
You're half and half, half shaved, half not shaved. And what was the reaction from family and friends when you decided to do this?
We go to Olive Garden quite often. And as soon as I sat down, the doctor, he's going to be a doctor, our waiter came over to me and says, I know what your problem is. Oh, you do? He said that sometimes when people have a stroke, a very small fraction, when they get recovered, they see only half vision.
He thought you were a stroke victim.
A stroke victim.
Oh, no.
And he gave me free food, actually. Well,
so you didn't tell him he was wrong.
I did. And then I showed him my yoga position.
Oh, yeah?
Yes. You want to see it?
I would be a fool to say no to you. Yeah, let's see your yoga position.
This is called a peacock pose.
All right. Let's see this. And Dana and I will do our best to describe.
Anybody with a computer, look up peacock pose, and you can visualize what I'm doing right now.
And Don, what's the level of difficulty for the peacock pose?
For the youngsters listening.
I can't find anybody that can.
No one else can do this.
Well, I saw, you know what? What was it? Prevention Magazine.
Yeah.
A woman in the back, and she had gray hair, and she was doing it. I said, well, okay.
She can do it. You can do it. Right.
I started doing this when I was 16 years old. first I started on the side of a couch, and then I did on the floor, and I happened to look at a yoga magazine one day, and I saw a dude doing the same thing. It's supposed to build up your digestive tract.
Oh, really? Yeah.
Yeah. So I hadn't done it for a long, long time until recently. I'm trying to write a book.
Yeah, good. You should write a book.
120,000 words so far. I'm still working on it.
Wow. That's impressive.
And by the way, my son Carl has put a website out. It's called, it's really hard to remember this, CubsFace.com.
CubsFace.com.
Okay.
And what's on the website?
It's all about the different things I have been going through. I was in the Harry, the 4th of July parade a few years back, right after Harry Carey died.
Yeah.
I was going to have Kate Smith. I was going to be at the back of the parade, have a big Kate Smith sing God Bless America.
Yeah.
But Harry Carey had just died.
Oh.
So we changed it to
a little more somber.
A caricature of Harry Carey, a big, big face.
Yeah.
And one son was operate one arm inside of him, and another son operate the other arm. And I operate his, turning his head and moving his lips as we piped in, "Take me out to the ball game." Oh, excuse me, I'm not supposed to be singing.
You're all right. That's okay.
Okay.
That's all right.
Okay, let me jump into my yoga position.
Okay, let's see it. Now, this is the peacock move, Dane. And it's so difficult that very few people can do this.
There's one lady on Prevention Magazine that was doing it. And the family is, of course, in studio here, and they've probably been super supportive.
They've been very supportive, but it also borders on embarrassed. It's somewhere in the middle of supportive and embarrassed.
Lovingly embarrassed.
So what we're seeing now is Don is levitating himself. He's holding on with both of his hands, but the rest of his body is up in the air, and he's holding that position for quite a long time. That's
very
amazing.
Impressive.
And not peacocks can do that?
Not bad for a 74-year-old fart.
Are you 74 years old?
Yes.
You're doing something right, Don. You're absolutely doing something right.
Well, I guess I was a vegan for 17 years.
But no longer?
I'm a vegetarian that eats dairy. Drinks dairy, eats dairy, and eats fish.
Oh, all right.
Jesus ate fish.
Yeah.
So that, here you, I am.
All right. Well, it's working. Whatever you're doing, keep doing more of that. Don Miller is here, Cubs fan extraordinaire. Half of his face is shaved, the other half is not, and he's going to do this until the Cubs win the World Series.
Yeah, my head's getting heavy on that one side. And by the way, the Cubs were losing 4-0 in the second inning.
Uh-oh.
You can't win them all, Don. But what if they get to the World Series? Is there any kind of shaving compromise you'll consider?
I thought they could go on YouTube or something. You know.
Yeah, do that. Do that. I know you've written a poem about your situation, and we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, you'll do the poem for us?
Absolutely.
Excellent.
Absolutely.
Don Miller is here, 74-year-old Lincoln Square native, who is an incredible Cubs fan. Half of his face is shaved. The other half is not. We'll talk more. If you want to jump in, we're 312-981-7200. It's Bill and Dane in for Wendy on WGN. Well, Don Miller is in studio with us. Don is 74 years old. Looks great. Never guess you're 74 years old. Now, when you see him, don't be afraid, because here's what you're going to see. Half of his face has all kinds of hair on it. He's got a mustache. He's got a beard. He's got
sideburns.
Sideburns. Thank you very much.
First syllable. Sounds like.
It's a book. It's a movie. No, it's sideburns. The other side of his face, completely clean shaven. He says he's going to do this until the Cubs win the World Series. Now, let's say they don't, Don. Let's just say, I don't want this to happen, but let's say they don't. How disappointed will you be, and will you carry this look on through next season as well?
I'm a person who, if I make a commitment, I will stand by it, no matter, they might bury me with my half of a
brain. No.
Oh, yes.
Only if you die.
Oh, yes, that's true.
Okay, so you should be fine.
Maybe I can get braided.
That'd be fun.
Well, it could be the start of a whole new craze where people will seek this out just for their own personal appearance as opposed to part of a kind of a sports mission. And you've got the whole family in studio here. At first, when you said it, you said you did this before the season started. They probably thought, maybe still do, that you're crazy to do this.
Oh, yeah.
But with the way the team is playing, have they become believers, right? This is working, Don.
I think it is working. They're getting
there.
The
family says they're getting there, but they're behind you. Literally. I don't know if they're figuratively behind you, but they're literally behind you. All right. Now, one of your many, many talents, sir, in addition to being able to levitate, I still can't believe you did that.
The peacock.
The peacock. The much dreaded peacock yoga move is that you have written a poem about the Cubs and you and your situation. Is there any way we can convince you to do that poem for us now?
Boy, that's, I don't know.
Could you? Come on.
Yeah.
All right. We talked him into it.
By the way, I'm no poet, so please don't.
That's all right.
Yes.
What's the name of the poem? Do you have a title for it?
I'm going to say One Look at Me.
One Look at Me. All right, let me set you up. Here is Don Miller with his poem, One Look at Me.
By the way, these days, the poems, most of them don't rhyme, so nothing rhymes here.
That's all right.
One look at me, you turn away, being not too obvious. You look again, you're thinking, are you kidding? You look again, squinting, the left side, disheveled and scary. The right, a baby's butt. So smooth and clean, Jekyll or Hyde is I. Why not? A bit touched? Lost a bet? Shave, you say? Not yet, I replied. But when, you ask? Why do I offend? The Chicago Cubs are the culprits. A just cause have I. Impossible, you say? Winning the World Series? We will see. I promise to shave the other side in time when the Cubs prevail. Until then, close your eyes.
Dane, that was both moving and stirring. We were moved and we were stirred.
And shaken. And stirred.
We were shaken and stirred. Well, much like a James Bond movie.
Well, thank you very much.
Well, that's fantastic. Now your career, you're not still working, right? Are you retired at this point?
Yes.
What did you do prior to being retired?
I work for a company called Golden Electric. Hi, Jim, my boss.
Hi, Jim. And what sort of work did you do for them?
I worked in the management, more or less.
Yeah.
Giving the guys the job as an electrical motors repairing facility.
Dane's not trying to scare you. Just move a little closer to the microphone.
It just hit me, though.
Dane, please. Don't abuse the guests, please.
That's okay. It was the right
trying
side.
Trying to incite the peacock.
How many Cubs games do you get to every year? Have you been to a few games this year already?
I tell you what, I live in Palatine, Illinois.
Yeah.
And I really haven't seen a game this year.
Have you not been to Wrigley this year at all?
No. You know, I hate to tell you.
You've got to go.
I was in 1952. Does that count? Hank Sauer had, what would he have? He had 121 RBIs and 30,
he had a pretty,
37.
He had some pretty decent years.
This one year.
Just one year.
37 home runs, and he was voted the most valuable player in the National League in 1952.
Yeah.
I was 10 years old. And a big guy, Ralphie, not in Christmas Story Ralphie, but another Ralphie. He and I decided he lived off of Clark Street.
Yeah.
5200. So we walked a mile over to Wrigley Field, and we had enough money for one person to get in there. So that made it kind of tough. So we started walking around the back by the bleachers, and this big guy, I mean, I'm 10 years old, so you know, he looked like 7 foot tall, and he was giving everybody a lift over the wall.
Yeah.
I thought that was kind of cool. So I stepped right in line. I said, look, Ralphie, isn't this neat? So the guy, he put down his hands, and I went over the fence, and oh, I heard something rip. It was my new jacket.
Oh, no.
Oh, yes. My great-grandparents brought me down to Maxwell Street and bought me this new jacket. And they said, when we go down there, don't drift away. This is a very dangerous neighborhood.
Yeah.
Okay, so we're going to risk our lives and get me a jacket. I understand that. But I was a disgrace to the family, so they had to do this.
I hate to hear this. Now, just a quick update, by the way. We're being told now in the newsroom the Cubs are still trailing, but it's a little bit closer. It's 5-2. So...
okay, we picked up.
They're still in it. We're getting
Chris
closer.
Chris Bryant, home run number 25.
Chris Bryant with another home run.
And, God.
Joe Maddon ejected in the second inning.
He's
yes, he was ejected.
All right, that's not good.
That is unusual.
Yep.
He's really a pretty
very
cool,
even-tempered, isn't
even
he?
Very cool dude.
All right, so what happens when you walk around town? I mean, we knew what to expect. We knew that you had half a beard and half a mustache and half your face is shaved. But most people, when they encounter you on the street, won't know that. So what kind of reaction are you getting just walking around town?
First, the kids just stare at me.
Yeah.
The adults glance and then turn away real fast.
But they do?
Yes,
that's
they do.
That's disconcerting. Are you okay with that?
Yeah, I guess I am. Then I explain to them what my motivation is, and they help give me a thumbs up.
Oh, they do. Good.
Yes.
You win them over.
I think if Don had, because not everybody, you can't have a personal conversation with each and every person. Maybe an explanatory T-shirt would be good. Like, hey, right, in case you're wondering.
Here's why half my face is shaved.
I do have one, but I didn't black marker. It didn't look too great. But maybe I should get it done professionally.
Who's your favorite current member of the team? I know you love Joe Maddon, but is there a player who really is above and beyond the best for you?
The one that just hit the home run.
Chris Bryant?
Chris Bryant.
Pretty amazing, isn't he?
Yes, those two guys together, unbelievable.
He and Rizzo?
Rizzo.
Yeah.
Don's wearing a Rizzo shirt as we speak.
I can't even remember his name.
Oh, Anthony Rizzo. Isn't it amazing when we have the All-Star break next week, it looks like there's going to be five or possibly six Cubs on that team starting.
Yes.
Wow. I don't remember ever seeing that.
That is great. That is going to be great. I can't wait.
Yeah. The whole infield, possibly Jake Arrieta and maybe Dexter Fowler in the outfield, that's a lot of representation.
It is. Boy, I wish the WGN would get it back on, get back in the radio.
I'll see what I can do for you.
Please.
Well, with so much success, and Bill, so many people are attributing it solely to the beard.
Yep. A lot of people are saying it's Don's beard.
All right.
So you're doing something right there, Don. I'm thrilled that you're doing this. I think this is a great thing. It is a little jarring when people see you at first, but then when you realize what a diehard Cubs fan you are and the story behind it, it's very easy to understand.
I'm really happy I'm on this show for all these people. I'm the program. All these people that look at me and say, what's with this dude?
Yeah.
So now half of Chicago knows.
That's right. That's so true.
That's
cool. Don, thank you. Good luck. I hope the Cubs win the World Series, not just for you, but for all of humanity. I don't know what that means, but I said it anyway. That's Don Miller, 74-year-old Cubs fan. Half of his face is shaved. The other half is not. He looks fantastic. Thank you, Don.
Thank you,
appreciate
sir.
It. A quick break, then Ryan with the news. Stick around. It's Bill and Dane in for Wendy on WGN. Ryan, thanks very much. Just to show you how good Joe Maddon is, the manager of the Cubs, sometimes a manager will sacrifice himself. He'll get thrown out of a game just to stir his team up. The Cubs were losing 5-0, and Joe Maddon did just that. Got himself tossed, ejected from the game. The Cubs quickly respond with at least 4 runs, and they have a guy on base.
In his honor.
In his honor.
That made them all swing harder?
Yep.
Okay.
Yep.
Chris Bryant wasn't hitting home runs before, but now.
Nobody on the team was hitting anything. Joe Maddon said, I got to stir my team up. I'll sacrifice myself. I'll jump on that grenade for the good of my team, and he did. And the Cubs are coming back from a 5-run deficit. They're down by 1. They got a guy on base. They're going to be fine. Don't worry about the Cubs. All right, I'm going to ask a question that I already know the answer to, and Dane, you already know the answer to.
It's
England.
Not fair.
No, I'm not. No, it's not. It's something else. But Ryan, can you stay for a second? Because I want to ask you this question. I want you to be the representative. I know you don't know the answer to this.
Okay.
All right.
You've got 9 minutes.
All right, here goes. Here goes. They changed a law in the state of Virginia where you could no longer marry a girl who is 13 years old. When would that law have been changed? Approximately.
I've lived in Virginia.
Did you live in Virginia?
I did, in Fredericksburg. Wonderful city. Wonderful little town.
So now think about that. Think about a guy who wants to marry a girl, and the girl is 13 years old, and Virginia at some point said, well, we can't have guys marrying 13-year-old girls. That's crazy. Mm-hmm. We got to change this law. So what year do you think that would have taken place? When do you think that would have been?
I'm going to say 1931.
1931 is a pretty good guess.
Pretty good guess.
The correct answer is Friday. They just changed the law.
And not 1931.
In Virginia.
Congratulations to the Commonwealth. Nice work.
On Friday, they changed the law, whereas you can no longer marry a girl who is 13 years old.
Or younger.
Or younger.
I mean, because there are some circumstances where if she was younger, you may need to marry her.
Shotgun wedding kind of situations.
But how crazy is that, right? Well, she's only 11, but the parents are consenting and she's pregnant.
Here's a story. Here is the story, and this was printed in the Washington Post over the weekend. Only adults can get married in Virginia, according to a new law replacing policies that made it possible for a girl aged 13 or younger to marry if she had parental consent and she was pregnant. So those are the two things you had to have going. The girl needed to be pregnant at the age of 13 or younger, and her parents had to agree to this union. Then it was legal until Friday for you to marry a girl who was 13 or younger. The law, which took effect on Friday,
sets the minimum age of marriage at 18 or 16 if a child is emancipated by a court order. It takes parents and pregnancy out of the equation. The change is aimed at curbing forced marriages, human trafficking, and statutory rape disguised as marriage. Activists say the previous law created a fast track to child marriages for abusers who made investigation by child welfare officials by simply marrying their victims. Here's some interesting numbers. Wow. Listen to this. Nearly 4,500 children under the age of 18 were married in the state of Virginia during the period of 2004 and 2013. So that's roughly, do the math on that with me, about 450 people a year, kids a year, were getting married in Virginia under those old laws. According to data from the state's Department of Health, this includes more than 200 children age 15 or younger during that same period, 15 or younger. About 90% of the underage spouses were girls. Now, I hate to sound sexist, but in my head, that was going to be 100%. I'm surprised that those numbers are as imbalanced as that.
Well, it said parental consent or pregnant.
So a guy obviously couldn't be pregnant, but he could have parental consent. Right. But still, that's a pretty high number. It's even though it's 10% to the girls, 90%, that's still a very high number. The girls married men aged 21 or older. These are girls, again, aged 13 to 15, who married older guys aged 21 or older. And sometimes the men were decades older, according to data. The statistics prompted Falls Church-based Tyree Justice Center, which works at the end of, to end forced marriage in the United States, to set about getting the laws of the state of Virginia changed through a rare bipartisan effort. Now, just on a personal note, I have to throw this in. Dana, I was already telling you this off air. When I was a kid, one of my cousins, let me get the lineage right, first, second, third cousin, was married at the age of 15. A female cousin of mine who lived here in the state of Illinois was married at the age of 15. Wow. Most of us in the family thought, because she was a couple years older than me, that this was a marriage that was not going to last very long. Her mom had to sign some documents saying that she approved of the marriage. She was fine with the marriage. She had met a guy who was a couple of years older than her, and they decided to get married, again, at the age of 15. Most of the family, even though we liked the guy, thought, well, this might last
like
a year.
The kid.
Could last. Yeah, he was essentially a kid at the time, and so was she. They are still married to this day, very happily married. So that's about 40 years ago. That's almost 40 years ago.
But even then, as you said,
Wait, I'm doing the math. Hold on. Closer to 30 years ago, not 40 years ago.
And even back then, this was still out of the norm. This was something that you wouldn't necessarily think would be something that should be done, right? There must be a better way or whatever. But it's great to see, you know, we joked with Don, you know, when you find the right person,
right,
you know, then you're good to go. And you love to hear those stories. But when Ryan mentioned 1931 is his guess as far as when this was last week.
This was Friday.
So this isn't 30 years ago.
No,
you know, this is now. And I don't know. And they have those funny segments that we'll do sometimes where it's the crazy laws that are still on the books.
Right.
But this is one, as you can see by some of the statistics and playing into some of those issues that are on the front page of the newspapers these days, you know, with human trafficking and the forced marriages that the bad guys or people were, you know, kind of utilizing to their benefit. But can you believe this?
No.
You know, 13 years old. Come on.
Not that it happened.
Or younger.
Just this past Friday. I'm very surprised. And again, you mentioned that segment that is a frequent radio staple, which is, here's some crazy laws.
You can't boil it. You know, you can't put an egg on a hot sidewalk in Arkansas.
Right. There's all those laws. And you know, at some point they made sense to somebody. But in this day and age, you got to be shocked that some clerk of the court of whatever state didn't look it over and go, wait a minute, this is the year 2016, and a guy could still come into a courthouse with a 13-year-old girl and apply for a marriage license and get that marriage license?
Well, you wonder when that law went into effect. We know when it was changed, but when it went into effect, and you get it way back in the day when people only lived to be, you know, 50 years old. Or something, and we made some great advancements over the decades, but you know, and people just had to kind of get, you know, move on, get a family, get going. It just was a different kind of society,
right.
But yeah, just the thought that people were doing this now, because you could have laws on the books that just don't ever come into play.
I know, but this one, but this is a marriage law where you would think. And I read you the statistics, nearly 4,500 children under the age of 18. Now, I could see a slight gray area where there's a 16 or 17-year-old or 18-year-old girl or guy, and you go, well, for the purpose of that couple, I guess that kind of makes sense. But I can't see anyone in that 13, 14, 15 age bracket where that would make sense.
Well, it says or younger, and you wonder, you know, it doesn't happen on an everyday basis. It's, 200 over 10 years. But you wonder at that courthouse or wherever this marriage is taking place, right, if, you know,
Chuck E. Cheese.
They got the package, the wedded bliss package.
Yes.
Well, you wonder
how many tokens do we get with that?
Do we get the pizza with that and the cake? Let's do it.
Oh, man.
As you wonder as they come into the courthouse, you know, someone that's 13 years old or younger with their 21 or decades older right. spouse to be, that they're like, wait a minute, this is not happening. And then they bring up the state constitution or something.
Right.
Say, look right here.
Here's where it says
this
we're
works.
Allowed.
Here's the parents signed it. At least somebody like them. Wow, it's crazy stuff.
Here's a strange text. 630 says, this is sexist. Why could they allow girls at 12 to marry but not 12-year-old boys? I would make the argument that neither boys or girls at the age of 12. I would do my best to convince any 12-year-old that wait 6 months, wait a year until you're an adult at 13. Don't get married at 12.
Well, and one of the factors that affected it was pregnancy. That seemed to be, you know, one of the main things. So they can go off. But what 12-year-old, 13-year-old, and their spouse are ready to go start a family anywhere?
Not at that age.
And unfortunately, things like that do happen. I mean, it does happen. I think that what would be the answer isn't necessarily get them married and send them out in the world.
Right.
It would be probably to, you know, find an adoption or maybe have a family member take the baby. I mean, it's a complicated situation, but I don't think marriage is right. That should be your option.
Let's go to the phones. We're at 312-981-7200. If you're just joining us, they just changed the law in Virginia on Friday, this past Friday. You can no longer marry a girl age 13 years or younger, as was the case for quite a while. Friday, they just finally amended that rule. Let's go to the phones. We'll start out with Katie. Hi, Katie. How are you?
Hi. Well, you think back during the Depression, and people in Virginia were very poor. Like Loretta Lynn, they only had shoes when they went to school.
Yeah.
They couldn't feed their whole family. And so at 13, I mean, she got married at 15, but 13, 14... they would go off, you know, and start a family of their own and go live with his parents or, you know, work together and that. It was much more common then.
Were people getting married, Katie, forgive me for not knowing this, but I don't, but were people getting married a lot younger because life expectancy was so much different then than it is now?
Only lived to 45.
Right.
I don't think they didn't look upon it then. But then you talk about, see, if a young boy would get a young girl pregnant, you know, say he was 16 and she was 14, and the parents would give consent. That was quite common. You got to remember, these are people back in the hollows and not like in the big city.
So they thought it was more honorable if your kids were that young and the girl had gotten pregnant, it somehow became more honorable to marry them and just say to everybody, well, they're...
shotgun wedding. When they make jokes about shotgun weddings, that was the truth.
Legit.
That would go on.
But here's the things that are different. Is Katie's mentioning Depression era.
Yeah,
you know, this is like the 20s and 30s.
Yeah.
And mentioning even like 15... As we've all grown up, you know, certain periods of time, 2 years... you know, ago, I was pretty much the same person. Hopefully 2 years from now, I'll be the same person. But the difference between someone that's 12 and 16 is...
I can't believe that their Congress was that ignorant.
Isn't that shocking?
Oh, I mean, it is. I mean, I couldn't believe it when you said that. When I heard that, it was unbelievable.
I know.
But see, that was very common back in the Depression. They had a whole slew of kids. Mama had a baby every year.
Yeah.
And they, you know, and they couldn't afford it. So anyway, well, have a good day. And God
thanks,
bless
Katie.
You.
Appreciate the phone call. You could marry a boll weevil back then. Did you know that?
But
it was perfectly
what was
legal.
The age limit on the weevil?
The weevil had to be 18 years or older.
Okay, well, that makes sense. That's a seasoned weevil.
Right, that is a seasoned weevil. I didn't think anyone would say that today, but you did. You said that was a seasoned weevil.
It's actually a minor league baseball team.
What are your thoughts on this? The state of Virginia, I can't believe I'm looking at the words going, no, that didn't happen on Friday. That happened back in the 1800s. No, on Friday they made it illegal for a guy to go in and marry a girl 13 years or younger. They just changed the law on Friday. We're at 312-981-7200. Give us a call or a text. We'll get to those in just a minute. It's Bill and Danan for Wendy on WGN.
It's me, Bill Leff. It's him, Dane Neal, filling in for Wendy Snyder, who is on vacation all this week. We have a myriad of people sitting in her chair. Dane was kind enough to do it today. Our topic right now is a law that just got changed in the state of Virginia. I'm not making this up. They changed the law on Friday, just this past Friday. You can no longer, as an adult, you can no longer bring in a 13-year-old girl and marry her, as was the case for a long, long time until Friday.
And before that, she could be even, so it's a girl here, or even younger. So let's say she's 11, 12, but satisfies the requirements of parental consent and being pregnant.
Yep.
Then you were, as they say, good to go.
Yep. We've got several calls. We've got several texts. We're at 312-981-7200. This may be my favorite text of the day, Dane. This may be my favorite text. 815 says...
Is it about the seasoned weevils?
No. That's separate. That's a whole separate bracket. They say, at age 13, that would not be a shotgun wedding. That would be a Nerf gun wedding. I guess it would be. Jim, hi. You're on WGN.
How you doing, guys?
I'm doing great. How about this law? Can you believe it? They just changed it on Friday.
Yeah, but you know what? If you went like into Illinois and all their statutes and laws, and I bet you if you looked really hard, it wouldn't take long before you found some really goofy laws.
Oh, I'm positive.
And the reason is it costs a lot of money to have a law taken off the books. So basically what they do is they just don't enforce it.
Yeah.
So I mean, yeah, but I could see that. I mean, you're a farmer. You need help.
How much help can an 11-year-old girl be?
girls don't do good, but, you know, you get a few boys, you know, and they could work, they could help you work, you know?
Well, that's the thing is, the key to this was repopulating the area, so if a guy had a girl there and it was his wife, he could easily manufacture, for lack of a better term, a whole staff
residence.
Of workers. Yeah. He could
seems
make
like a
help.
Time consuming process.
I know. But Jim, you're onto something. That's so true, isn't it?
Yeah, you need boys, you know. They did that. Didn't they do that in China? I mean, they literally would kill a female baby because they couldn't use them to work.
Oh, no, I hope not. Is that true? I hope that's not true. Is that going on?
That is pretty much true, Bill.
Oh, no.
And it was not that long ago.
Ugh.
Well, they have, because of the population, just to kind of like clean that up a little bit, because of the population, you're only allowed to have one child
in
your family. And so since in the culture, yeah, they've gotten rid of it. But in the culture, you know, the male in the family or like having a boy in your family was more advantageous the family. And so if you only got one, then they would.
You'd want it to be a boy in that case. Yep. Yeah. Wow. That's awful.
That's pretty wild, huh?
Beyond wild. Jim, thank you so much. Have a great week.
No problem.
Take care.
And Bill, we talked about, you know, off the air, crazy laws, you know, the ones, and they're kind of funny. You know, you're not allowed to ride the horse backwards on Sunday,
right,
if it's raining in Arkansas.
That makes sense. But that one makes sense. A lot of them are silly, but I can understand that one.
Yeah. Who would want to do that?
Several people alluding to the fact that because of the Depression, and I want to just say, because we hit on this a little bit earlier, that was an extremely different time than we have right now. Maybe it was more acceptable culturally to be able to marry somebody at the age of 13 or 14. But now it just seems backwards. When my cousin got married at the age of 15, we all thought, and I know this sounds terrible, but we all thought, well, that's the kind of thing that only happens like in the Smoky Mountains or something where you'd have to marry somebody at 15. We didn't think it happened in Illinois.
Like a Hatfield and McCoy.
Yeah, a forced wedding so that the families wouldn't feud and throw tobacco at each other. But it happened here in Illinois, so what do I know?
Well, here's the thing that is a little bit different about it. And you can have laws that maybe people don't pay attention to or are still on the books, or how much does it cost to take the law off? But there are other laws that are in effect and people enforce on a regular basis. And one of which, or a handful of them, actually supersede this opportunity to have this, you know, 12-year-old, 13-year-old girl pregnant and have parental consent. Because with the birds and the bees here, Bill, just that whole pregnancy process would have been probably a statutory rape almost anywhere, right?
I would think.
Depending, you know, and then you have the parental consent. So if you need that beforehand too, for the parents to consent to such an act like that would have been child endangerment. I'm sure that would, you know, the parents don't have the right to put a child in that position.
Right.
And those are the kind of the essential things that you need to head to the courthouse, right?
So
there would have been other laws broken in advance.
I would
of
think.
That.
I would imagine. 815 says, back then, a father would let his daughter get married just for some sort of trade item,
And that's true. The dowry system, which I think is...
Like for a mule or something?
Yeah, that was the going rate for a mule.
A sack of
a flour.
Flax seed.
Yeah. They didn't have eBay back then.
They didn't.
They had to, their whole trade system was way out of whack back then. Now we know.
No Craigslist, nothing.
No, that didn't exist back then. Come on. All right, we'll take a quick break, and then I believe Brian Noonan is in for Roe, so we'll find out what he has. Stay where you are. It's Bill Leff and Dane Nealon for Wendy on WGN.